to please stand up and move towards the center so people can take seats, please. Thank you very much. And up in the balcony, I need two volunteers to bring mics to people who are sitting in the middle. Can I have two volunteers up in the balcony? I'm about to volunteer you if you don't want to volunteer yourself. Thank you. Great. If you can sit towards, take the mic. If someone doesn't want to come to that mic up there to speak, could you take it and pass it to them in the middle? Thank you. Can I have somebody over here, please, to do the same thing? Can I have... Thank you very much. So all you have to do is just come... If someone in the middle wants to speak, just pick up the mic there and hand it down to them. Thank you. Can I have your attention, please? We have a quorum here, so I call this meeting to order. The fire chief has told me that there are some cars parked in the fire lane in front of the building. You're going to either be ticketed or towed, plus it's a fire hazard. I strongly recommend that you take the time to move the car to the side parking lot. My name is Myron Fox. Is that a question out there? Thank you. My name is Myron Fox, and it's an honor to be your moderator at the 2007 annual town meeting. I have appointed Fred Pryor to be the assistant town moderator because it looks like we're going to need some help in the cafeteria. Fred has, for many years, was on the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School Committee. And in addition, he's currently the president of the Board of Directors of the Wayside Inn. I declare that a quorum is present. I do have a question for the auditorium. And that is, there's a Tom Arnold, a resident of Sudbury, who's a private photographer. He has been commissioned to do a pictorial history of Sudbury, and he wishes to take a picture of voters in the auditorium. Can I just have a show of hands for all those who have no objection to his taking pictures? Please raise your cards. Thank you. Those who have objections, it passes very overwhelmingly. So, Mr. Arnold, wherever you are, you may take pictures as long as you don't get in the way. We are indeed honored tonight to have an Iraqi war veteran among us from Sudbury. He will be giving the opening address. We appreciate the sacrifice of our men and women in the armed services. In a moment, you will be able to see the names of those Sudbury residents who have connections to the armed services. Sudbury's veteran agent, Peter Harvell, has asked us to show you these names, and I've asked Captain Dennis Ford to give a presentation. Dennis has lived in Sudbury with his wife and two young children for 6 years. He's currently serving in the U.S. Army and is stationed at Natick Labs after having been deployed to both Iraq and Afghanistan. Captain Ford.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good evening. It's truly an honor to be here this evening. I want to thank Mr. Peter Harvell, the Sudbury Veterans Agent, for inviting me here to say a few words tonight. A year ago today, I was standing in Baghdad, Iraq, deployed with the U.S. Army. Although the conditions were less than ideal, it truly was an eye-opening experience. There are still many places in the world today that the people cannot participate in an open debate or participate in the democratic process. Although we, as a society, may not agree on all issues, we do have the freedom to debate openly and participate in democracy. My fellow Sudbury residents, you are the legislative body that will shape the future here in Sudbury. Let us all be reminded to be civil in our debates and fair in our votes, and to cherish the tradition of freedom we all share here in the United States. I want to thank you for your participation in the annual town meeting and for giving me the opportunity to be here this evening. God bless and thank you.
Thank you, Captain Ford. As you know, each year we have the Pledge of Allegiance led at the annual town meeting by a student at Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. This year, the individual selected for the honor is Carl Nyangoni. Carl, can you please step up to the microphone? Let me say a few words about him so you know him better. Carl is one impressive young man. He has taken high school by storm, finding his niche in athletics, particularly football and track, as well as leadership and in the classroom. And by the way, please shut off all your cell phones. As a student, Carl has done primarily honor work in a very demanding curriculum. He excels in math and science. Teachers are taken with his intellect, work ethic, investment in the learning process, energy, and active participation in their classes. A natural leader, Carl seamlessly bridges the many different groups and subcultures that exist within Lincoln Sudbury. He is a disciplined athlete, a team player. His spirit and positive influence are consistently felt by both his coaches and his teammates. He's very active in scouting and has just become an Eagle Scout. He is also winner of this year's DAR Award. Carl, would you lead us? Would you all rise? And Carl will lead us in the pledge. Thank you, Carl. The certified free cash, according to the town accountant, Barbara Chisholm, is $1,916,902. I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the office's return of service, and confirmation of delivery of the warrant to the residents of the town of Sudbury. I now recognize Chairman William Keller, Jr., for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the office's return of service, notice, and the individual articles in the warrant. Mr. Keller, is there a second? All those in favor, please raise your cards. Those opposed? It's nearly unanimous. I'd like now to introduce you to town officials for those of you who don't know them. To my right is the town clerk, Rosemary Harvell. Could you just raise your hand when I say your name? Next to her is the assistant town clerk, Judy Newton. To my left is Selectman John Drabinski. For those of you who don't recognize John, he's been serving as a selectman since the 1800s. You made fun of my picture. Larry O'Brien, to his right, and to John's left is William Keller, Jr., chairman of the Board of Selectmen. Town manager, to his left, is Maureen Valente. Town accountant, Barbara Chisholm. Town council, Paul Kenny, to my left. At the viewgraph, we have Mary McCormick, the administrative assistant to the Board of Selectmen. Patty Golden, supervisor of the Office of Selectmen. Elaine Jones, who manages the town legal department. Here's Mrs. Jones. And the person we really can't do without, Mark Thompson, our technology administrator. On my far left is the Finance Committee. Chairman is Bob Jacobson. Bob, can you raise your hand so they can all see how sick you are? Larry Rowe. Sheila Stewart. Ralph Verney. Bill Nealon, Jr. Marty Raganese. Debbie Zerka. And Chuck Woodard. Assistant Town Manager on the floor with the crutches is Wayne Walker. And our treasurer, tax collector, finance director, Andrea Turkelson. Coffee and snacks are in the area where you checked in tonight, sponsored by Sudbury Destination Imagination Teams, which is an international youth-centered program emphasizing creativity, problem-solving, and teamwork. LS informs me that there's no food or drink except water in the auditorium, but you may do so outside or in the cafeteria. In the check-in area, you can also purchase a Sudbury Opoly game from the Peter Noyes PTO. 100% of the proceeds is going to the Noyes Elementary School. Also is an exhibit by the Earth Decade Committee right near that. That committee has asked me to announce that they are proud to announce that Sudbury Town Meeting is among the first in the nation to be pollution-free. The Earth Decade Committee estimated that approximately 1,000 pounds of CO2 will be generated by the usage of cars in coming here. The committee donated money to the New England Wind Farm Fund to buy the equivalent amount of clean energy. Other announcements. In the back of your warrant that you all should have, if you don't have, if you've forgotten your warrant, there's some extras right up front here. Please come and get them. But in the back of your warrant, there are several opportunities to sign up for. One is we need volunteers for the annual roadside cleanup, which will be held on Saturday, April 28th. Trash bags will be handed out behind Town Hall from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Rain date is May 5th. Secondly, you can register your interest in serving on a town board or committee. Please consider how you might lend your talents to town government. Some committee memberships do not require a great deal of time, but all provide valuable contributions. And thirdly, you can obtain a dog license by filling out the form in the back of your warrant. The fire chief wants me to remind you that there are two exits in the rear of the auditorium, both on the floor and up in the balcony. And in addition, if you're in the floor, you may exit via the stage. There are two stairways onto the stage. In the cafeteria, there are two doors in which you came in, and there are two doors in the rear that are locked if you try to come in, but you can go out in case of emergency. Bathrooms are located across the hall from the auditorium, and I believe across the hall from the balcony, and also across the hall from the cafeteria. The Sudbury Medical Reserve Corps has a table outside near where you checked in. It is part of a state effort to develop response teams at the local community level in the event of a large-scale public health or public safety threat here in Sudbury. They are looking to add both medical and non-medical volunteers to the response team's roster. I encourage you to check them out. Also, the Sudbury Senior Center, Council on Aging, asked me to announce that if you're living alone and you have a serious health condition or you might need special help during an emergency, you can put your name on the Sudbury Emergency Call List. Please call the Senior Center, 978-443-3055. There are also materials on the tables where you came in about various warrant articles. The warrants and town reports were delivered to you by the Boy Scouts, led by Ann McNabb, to whom we owe a great debt of gratitude. And finally, I'd like to introduce some guests. We have tonight two Lincoln Sudbury foreign exchange students. We have Nicholas Vines. If you can come up to the front, Nicholas, and also with Fernanda Sanovic. Nicholas is from Germany. Nicholas is from Germany, and Fernanda is from Brazil. Welcome to our town meeting. Thank you for coming tonight. And if they're in the hall, I'd be glad to introduce our state senator, Pam Reeser, our other state senator, Susan Fargo, and our state representative, Tom Conroy. I guess not. So I will recognize Selectman Lawrence O'Brien for resolution in memory of those citizens who have served the town and passed away during the past year.
Whereas this past year has seen some very special members of the Sudbury community pass from life, and whereas these special citizens and employees have given their time and talents to enrich the quality of life of the town, now therefore be it resolved that the town of Sudbury hereby express its deep appreciation for the services and gifts of the following: Anna R. Allen, Louis Baldwin, David Bentley, Janet Callahan, Marianne Clark, Betsy DeWallace, Mary Dunn, Elizabeth Egginson, Winifred Fitzgerald, Joanne Frisoli, author Bill Grellier, Dallas Hayes, Charlotte Herring, Claire Jarvis, Phil Lemieux, John McLean, Jr., Paul McNally, Dr. Stephen Meyer, Rita Monroe, Edith Rifkin, Albert Sabansky, Barbara Spotswood, Sylvia Throckmorton, Patricia Walsh, Raymond Woodward. And be it further resolved that the town of Sudbury and town meeting assembled record for posterity in the minutes of this meeting its recognition and appreciation for their contributions to our community.
Thank you. For many years, it has been a tradition at the annual town meeting to honor a citizen who has performed valuable services for the town of Sudbury by asking him or her to make the motion under Article 1. This year, it is my great privilege for us to honor Susan Pope. Sue Pope has served five terms as state representative for the 13th Middlesex District, which includes Wayland, Sudbury, and Lincoln. She has also served on the Wayland Board of Selectmen from 1994 until 2003. And before that, she served on the Wayland School Committee from 1985 to 1994. She is a 35-year resident of the town of Wayland, which is clear that she moved there when she was age 4 because she's only 39 now. Past awards presented to Representative Pope have included the 2005 Legislator of the Year Award from the Massachusetts Legislators Association, where she was honored alongside White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card. The 2004 NFIB Guardian of Small Business Award, the 2004 Library Advocacy Award, the 2004 Metro West Growth Management Regional Spirit Award, the Executive Office of Elder Affairs Annual Eva Hensler Award for Excellence in Service on Behalf of Elders, the Jewish Community Relations Council and the Massachusetts Association of Jewish Federation Legislative Achievement Award, the METCO Program Contributions Award. She has also received the Pillar of Justice Award from the South Middlesex Legal Services for restoring funds for low-income legal services, as well as the Massachusetts Medical Society, Mass Society of Eye Physicians and Surgeons Legislative Achievement Award. Most recently, she was awarded the Richard T. Moore Legislative Leadership Award presented by the Gun Owners Action League. Susan, would you honor us by reading Article 1?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I am most appreciative of this recognition tonight, and I am very proud and honored to have been your state rep for 10 years. Now, Mr. Moderator, Article 1. I move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and committees as printed in the 2006 town report or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction or errors, if any, were found.
Do I hear a second? Great. I take it the FinCom has no position and the selectmen are in favor of this. I will ask all those in favor to raise their cards. All those opposed? It's nearly unanimous. Thank you, Sue Pope. I would like to review with you some procedural matters for town meeting before we get to the consent calendar, which is next. I hope everyone has reviewed their warrant and familiarized himself and herself with the summary of basic town meeting procedures and the motion primer, which you can find in the beginning of your warrant on pages Roman numeral 2 and 5. Just to remind you, as I did a little earlier, please turn off all cell phones, and obviously there's no smoking anywhere in the building. When you wish to speak, please give your name and address each time you speak in order to assure a clear audio tape record. If you desire to be recognized, please raise your hand. Do not stand at the microphones. I will be able to see you in your seat. And if you're sitting near a standing microphone and you are recognized, you may go there to speak. Otherwise, wait for one of the runners. We have two of them here, and we'll have two people helping us upstairs in the balcony. And they will bring you a handheld mic. The microphone will be on. You don't have to blow in it. It takes 3 seconds from the time it leaves his hands to the time it gets to you, and it's on. It's automatic. So again, please start your presentation with your name and address clearly for the record, because otherwise we can't keep a clear record. The reason why we're using these runners once again this year is because, as you saw, the very long aisles, we can't otherwise get people in the middle to be able to speak to us. In the cafeteria, after you're recognized by the assistant moderator there, please go to one of the three standing microphones. All motions of substance, including main motions and motions to amend, should be delivered to myself and the town clerk in writing before they are made. Also, you should give a copy to the folks at the ViewGraph in the front of the hall. This enables me to make to see that what you're making, the amendment that you're making, is within the four corners of the article. And it also gives a chance to the folks at the ViewGraph to put it up on the screen so everyone can see your motion or your amendment. When you make a motion or an amendment, You must do so when you're first recognized. You cannot make a speech first and then make a motion at the tail end of your speech. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents who will not have colored cards as the residents do and are required to sit in the last two rows in the back of the floor of the auditorium. And if a non-resident desires to speak, a resident will ask on his or her behalf and will take a vote of the hall to see if the hall wishes to hear from that person. I caution those of you who are here because of a special matter of concern not to bolt the hall as soon as you have voted on the matter. You will be showing your neighbors a courtesy by listening to their articles as they have listened to yours. Also, we will be able to hear anything that happens in the cafeteria, and they will be able to hear and see what's happening here in the auditorium. Please be reminded that if you're making a presentation on your motion at the beginning of an article, you have 10 minutes total, whether you use it all yourself or share it with someone else. And other speakers, which is the vast majority of you, will permit it under our bylaw a total of 5 minutes. So please plan accordingly as requests to exceed these limits are granted sparingly. I'd like every person who's making a motion of an article that's in the warrant has to tell the hall right after the motion is seconded and reports are made and before their presentation, must tell the hall, if, unless you're moving in the words of the article, how your motion differs from the article that is seen in the warrant by the voters. Counting will take considerably longer in this auditorium because of the very long rows and without aisle breaks. So please do not ask for a head count by tellers unless you are sure that I've miscalculated. I assure you that unless a standing vote is obvious, I will call for a telecount. If you're at home and you wish to vote on an article and you're watching on cable TV, I strongly suggest you leave well before the discussion begins because you'll need adequate time to park, to check in at the tables inside the side doors, and to find your way to either the auditorium or the cafeteria. Because when the vote is called, the doors will be locked in all venues so that we can do a proper vote count. And it would be unfortunate if you cut it too close and were unable to vote. For those of you who want to know the percentage required to pass each motion, all you have to do is look on the, in the warrant under each article. It states what the percentage is. I will also, in most cases, repeat it. A brief comment on reconsideration for all of you in the hall. It was requested twice by the losing parties at the 2005 annual town meeting. Both lost overwhelmingly on the reconsideration vote. There is a very long tradition in Sudbury of only granting reconsideration in very limited circumstances, namely, where there were such misrepresentations that enough voters at that original vote would have changed their mind and the entire vote would have come out differently. In the 37 years that I've lived in town of Sudbury and attended town meeting, I've only seen reconsideration be successful on less than a handful of times. And the reason of that is because there are many, many town meeting attendees who, despite having been on the losing side of the original vote, will still vote against reconsideration. I know it is a common sense of sentiment that if you're on the losing side of a vote, there's two things you want to do right away. Ask for a recount and then ask for reconsideration. Not a good idea. Unless that vote was if it was close, we're going to do a vote count. And in terms of reconsideration, it's going to prejudice your case when you come the next year after not being satisfied with the vote and trying to get a second vote at the very same town meeting. As is our tradition, there's no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noises for or against speakers before, during, or after presentations. That speakers may not make disrespectful remarks whether directed at a voter, speaker, particularly the town moderator, or any town official. My job as moderator is to ensure full and open discussion and fair play on every article. Your job as legislators is to ensure goodwill and respect for differing viewpoints. We'll now recognize the chair of the Board of Selectmen, Bill Keller, for a State of the Town address.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Greetings. I'd like to welcome everyone to the 2007 Sudbury Annual Town Meeting. It is my honor and pleasure to address you this evening as chair of the Board of Selectmen and to deliver a State of the Town address. As I see it, our town and its government is superlative. We are a vibrant community, financially sound, and well-managed. I would like to review some of the reasons I come to that conclusion, and I will do so in the context of some of the values and goals the selectmen have set to provide direction to our town government. As we see it, the two components of our role as selectmen is ensuring that things get done and communication to the citizens of the town. I remind you that we have a town website where you can access a considerable amount of valuable information and resources. This past year, the website was cited by Common Cause as an exemplary municipal government website. That is a credit to the staff and volunteers who maintain it and provide the postings accessed daily by so many residents. We endeavor to protect and enhance the financial health of the town. The town's financial condition continues to be good. Your tax dollars are being well spent providing the services you want and expect to receive from the town government. We continue to enjoy a AAA bond rating assigned to us by Standard & Poor's. In granting the rating, it noted four factors underlying our financial health: experienced financial management, low debt burden, strong property tax base growth, and high wealth and income factors. For fiscal year 2007, which was last year, our town budget and financing plan was awarded the prestigious Distinguished Budget Presentation Award from the Government Finance Officers Association of the United States and Canada. I had never heard of that organization either. They've recognized this, and it is the highest award that a local government can receive for its budgeting process, and we are among only 9 Massachusetts communities to earn that award. However, we recognize that there are challenges on our financial horizon. Tonight, we will be considering an override budget for the coming fiscal year. While it is not something that we are happy about, it is a financially responsible course of action. It is important to note that we've been doing things to try to avoid overrides. However, we face a structural deficit that our finance committee has been reporting on and describing. It will not be easily overcome. You will hear more about this in the Finance Committee report this evening. The problems in that structural deficit encompass education funding, municipal employee health insurance, and senior tax relief, and will require action by the state legislature. It is the policy of the selectmen that these issues receive our town government's highest attention. Our commercial tax base needs to grow. Sudbury has had a history of being known as unfriendly to business. While that is changing, we must be serious about attracting new business. This past year, we approved a site plan for a BMW dealership on Route 20 at Old County Road. It will be replacing a tired office complex that had quite a few vacancies. It will generate more tax dollars than it did previously. In addition, the business owner made substantial financial contributions to roadway improvements on Route 20. This sends the right message, and we will encourage more activity of this type. On the warrant for this town meeting, there was a proposal to revise the sign bylaw. These are modest changes by the business requested by the business community, and its passage will be a further step in the right direction. A few years ago, we changed our zoning bylaw to allow senior residential communities. We are about to start reaping the benefit. In the coming year, there will be approximately 80 units that will be developed and constructed. This adds to our tax base and not to our school population. Another of our goals is to protect the environmental quality of the town. The past year has seen resolution of litigation with the city of Marlborough over pollution emanating from the Marlborough Easterly Wastewater Treatment Plant. This will be an environmental improvement for our ponds and waterways. It has come about because of concerted effort by town staff and committed volunteers. Those volunteers are your friends and neighbors, and they deserve your thanks. Another point on environmental quality. Tonight, our town meeting is carbon neutral. In your warrant and along with your town report, you received a communication from the Earth Decade Committee. Again, volunteers, your friends and neighbors. They have urged contributions to the New England Wind Fund, and they have used some of those proceeds to purchase carbon credits, just like was done for the Academy Awards. Now, we're not the Academy Awards, but we are carbon neutral tonight, and I think that's something we should be proud of. Last year at town meeting, we considered Article 3, curbside trash pickup, which was referred to a committee for study and report back this year. The selectmen established a solid waste disposal committee, defined its mission, advertised for applicants, interviewed and appointed the committee. The committee is just starting its work. Our intention was to have a report tonight, but we were overly optimistic. The committee is working, and it will report to town meeting when it has completed its task. I would like to say a little bit more about volunteerism. It is at the heart of what makes Sudbury the kind of community it is. Last year, we approved an expenditure from Community Preservation Fund for the construction of a new field, new community field at LS. The taxpayer funds that went into that were not sufficient to complete the project. Volunteers stepped forward and raised over $250,000 to allow the project to proceed. Additional enhancements of this project will occur with donated funds, all raised by volunteers. It is through this combined action by town government and regular citizens that allow us to enhance the unique sense of place that is the town of Sudbury. These are just some highlights of activities from the past year. I direct you all to the website and this year's town report, which arrived at your home with the warrant, where you can see more details about the activities of the past year. Last year, in his State of the Town address, Selectman O'Brien explained his view of the town as being a glass that is more than half full. I agree, but I add that we are not standing still. We are moving forward. We are on the right track. We will face adversity. We will do so as a community, and our glass will continue to fill. Lastly, I'm compelled to acknowledge the tragic events of January 19th. It's a shocking event. It was a reminder that bad things happen. They can happen anywhere. They can happen in Sudbury. We all feel the hurt. We have come together as a community to face it, to learn from it, and eventually make any changes that are necessary. Volunteers have stepped forward to serve on a review committee that will do the work and report to the community at large. The Allensons have been in all of our thoughts and prayers. At our community meeting, and since then, many folks have expressed a desire for us to do something for them. I was able to convey this to the Allenson family. It was quite a number of weeks ago. And just today, I was contacted by a representative of the family, a family member. I can tell you that the Allensons do appreciate the many expressions of sympathy, support, and concern that they have received from the community. They are receptive to allowing us to be of assistance to them as they move forward. I will endeavor to do so on behalf of the community. I will need help. I will ask for a few volunteers. I am confident folks will help me. But these are things, as you will all understand, need to be done privately, quietly, and respectfully. And I will endeavor to do that over the coming year. Thank you.
I understand that the Finance Committee will wait until Article 3 on the budget to make its statement. Thank you. We're now on the consent calendar. Please turn to pages Roman numeral 3 and Roman numeral 4 of your warrant. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the process and those of you who need some refreshing, I will call out the numbers of the articles one by one. If any voter has any doubt about passing any motions or wishes an explanation of any subject on the consent calendar, the voter should stand and say hold in a loud, clear voice when the number of that article is called. You need not be called on by me. I will then ask you whether that request for a hold is for a question on that subject matter or a debate. If the purpose of the request was merely to ask a question, I will make an attempt to obtain a satisfactory answer for you. If that occurs, the article will remain on the consent calendar absent a further request to hold. If the purpose of the request was to hold the article for debate, the article will be removed from the consent calendar and restored to its original place in the warrant to be brought up and debated and voted on in the usual way. No voter should hesitate to exercise the right to remove matters from the consent calendar. It is the view of the voters as to the need for debate that is supreme, not that of town officials who put together the consent calendar. Having said that, it is hoped that voters will remove articles from the consent calendar only in cases of genuine concern. In past years, it has occasionally happened that articles were removed from the consent calendar and, when reached in the normal course, passed unanimously without debate, thus indicating that the initial removal request was perhaps not fully considered before being exercised. I'm now going to read each article by number. I will wait a few seconds to see if anyone has a hold. Article 9. Fred, in the cafeteria, you'll let me know if anyone in there has a hold, please. Article 12. Article 14. Is that for a question or is it a debate? It's on Article 14. We will hold Article 14 until it comes up in the usual course in the warrant. Article 15. Question or debate? Article 16. Article 17. Article 18. Article 19. Article 20. Yes, could you stand, please? Is that for debate or a question? Please ask it. Hang on a minute. Could you bring Mr. Coe a microphone?
Mr. Moderator, the
name and address for the record, please.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. The question is, how much money is in the revolving fund? Why does the school committee want to abolish the revolving fund? And why was the reason for abolishing the revolving fund not printed in the warrant?
Okay. Somebody want to answer that question? School committee, please. Right there is fine. Why don't you, for the record, give your name and address to the fans here?
Susan Giuliano. I'm on the Sudbury School Committee, and I live at 22 Jason Drive. This particular early childhood revolving fund is used to collect tuition payments for the preschool program run by the Sudbury Schools. This program is operated to provide mandated services to preschool children who require special education within the regular education classroom. And so we do this in a cost-effective way, in part because we charge tuition to students who don't receive the special services. It was set up originally under Chapter 4453E and a half, like other town funds, and has operated that way for some time. But this statutory provision has certain restrictions. One of those is that no one department, including the school department, may spend from this type of revolving fund an amount that is that represents more than 1% collected in taxation in the previous fiscal year. So what this means in practical effect is that we're able to deposit fees in funds like bus fees or, in this case, tuition payments into a fund, but we're not necessarily able to spend them because we hit the cap. We have been working with the Department of Revenue, and they have recommended that we instead use a fund that is more appropriate. It's a school-specific revolving fund provision in state law that's used for program fees and tuition, such as our preschool tuitions. So they recommend that we switch to that fund, and they directed us to use the particular procedure that's laid out here, that is to terminate the Chapter 44, 53E and a half fund at town meeting, also to encumber or set aside the remaining revenue in that fund just to pay for expenses incurred in this fiscal year. But then after the termination of the fund, no more tuitions will go into that fund. They'll go into a new fund that the school committee is enacting under Chapter 71, Section 47, the school-specific revolving fund. So that's the reason. The reason is that it's not a practical mechanism. There's a better way. We've been recommended to set it up under that provision. That was described, I guess, only partially in the town warrant, but that's the explanation for the reason. There's going to be another fund. We're continuing the program in the same way. Currently in the fund, there's a total revenue of $250,076. What we anticipate are total expenses for fiscal 07 of $222,017.75. A portion of that, a significant portion of that, has already been expended. A remaining portion of that would then be encumbered, subject to the authorization of town meeting. The amount that is left at the end, after all the expenses for 07 have been paid, will then, which we expect to be about $13,000, would then revert to the general fund for the town and would be available in the future for town revenues.
Mr. Coe, does that answer your question? Thank you. Does anyone else wish to hold Article 20 for debate or for another question? Thank you. Fred Pryor in the cafeteria, did anyone ask for any questions or debate on any of the articles there? Fred, can you hear me on this mic? If so, you can respond back on your mic. Was that an answer? Thank you. I'm now going to call for a vote. Fred, that's a nice picture. Can you put the motion back on the screen? It's not that good a picture. Great. And Mark, can you eliminate 14 and 15 in both of those motions? While we're waiting for that to go back on the screen, I'm going to ask Selectman Chair Keller if there is a motion to take Articles 9, 12, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20 out of order and consider them together at this time.
So moved.
Is there a second? This requires a 4/5 vote. So I'm going to ask everybody in the Finance Committee have an opinion? Selectmen wish to give an opinion? No. I will ask all those who are in favor of the first motion as I just read it, as Selectman Keller just made it, please signify by raising your cards. Thank you. I'm just waiting for a minute because it takes a little longer in the cafeteria. All those opposed? I see no hands in the auditorium. Fred, is it also unanimous in the cafeteria? Our star AV person from LS is going down to help Fred. Thank you. Modern technology. It is unanimous also in the cafeteria, so I declare the first motion about the consent calendar passed unanimously. Selectman Chair Keller, is there a motion in the words of the consent calendar motions as presented, as printed in pages Roman numeral 3 and Roman numeral 4 in the warrant for Articles 9, 12, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20? Bill, can I have a so moved? Is there a second? Great, thank you. All those, and this has to be a unanimous vote, all those in favor of the second motion that Mr. Keller just made, please signify by raising your cards. Thank you very much. All those opposed? There are none in the auditorium. It is also unanimous in the cafeteria. I will declare that passed unanimously. We're now going to move on to Article 2, Fiscal Year 07 Budget Adjustments. This will be the budget that we passed last year. And I will call on the town manager, Maureen Valente, for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This is a different motion than is in your warrant pretty much entirely. I move to appropriate the sums received for fire and police officers injured in the line of duty to be added to the amount appropriated under Article 5, Fiscal Year 07 Operating Budget of the 2006 Annual Town Meeting to pay such salaries and wages from insurance coverage provided for that purpose.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? Thank you. Ms. Valente for a presentation.
Just very briefly, what happens is when police or fire officers are injured in the line of duty, they're out, and then we have to call through usually the use of overtime back in other officers to cover their shifts, to keep the fire station open, to keep the sector cars going. We're paying overtime for that, and we don't budget for that. Instead, what we do is procure insurance against this loss, and so we pay for that to the town, and insurance proceeds come in. But right now, unless we make this kind of budget provision, those proceeds just go in the general fund. They don't go back to the fire salaries line or the police salaries line. So the chiefs are now trying to manage with a reduced funding situation. What this will do is take those insurance proceeds, we also have this going forward in the 08, and put them right back in the salary lines. That is the reason we procure the insurance. We just need to take this step legally to make all of that happen. In terms of what are the dollars, we don't have an exact figure because both the cases that where we have injuries and both fire and police are ongoing. Our best estimate is for the fire department, we would receive insurance claim revenue of $22,000 around that, and in the police department, around $41,000. And again, those are big dollars that these chiefs are having to find ways of covering. And by cutting back, and this allows them to get back to what was the level of staffing, or at least closer to it, that we intended when we enacted the FY07 budget.
Finance Committee? Was that, we didn't catch that, is that to support the article?
Yes.
Thank you. Selectmen?
Selectmen support the article.
Okay. We'll take any, either from the cafeteria, the balcony, or the floor of the auditorium. Anyone care to be heard on this subject? I see no hands in the auditorium. If I've missed someone, just yell out. Fred, is that the same story in the cafeteria? Fred, why don't you and I will use the I can use the mic and speak to you, but you can't speak to me on the mic, so why don't you use the walkie-talkie? There are no hands raised in the cafeteria. We will proceed to a vote. All those in favor of Article 2 signify by raising your cards. Thank you. All those opposed. I declare the vote to be unanimous. We're now going to move on to the budget, and I'd like to say a few words just so everyone understands what our budget procedure is. The tradition in Sudbury is to first take a motion from the Finance Committee proposing a budget that would limit to the amount which would be required to finance the Finance Committee's budget proposal. This limiting motion will only seek a declaration from the Hall as to the overall limit on the budget. In other words, a not-to-exceed number. A vote in favor of the motion will not mean that town meeting has voted for a particular distribution of the total amount as set forth in the warrant. Once we dispose of the limiting motion, the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read line by line items 100 to 900 on page 6 of your warrant. And I will ask, as we go through each line item, if anyone has a motion to amend. It is at that time that you can make a motion to amend to reduce a line item. Or you can increase one item and decrease another by a similar amount. You cannot make a motion merely to increase a line item alone, because then the budget will exceed the not-to-exceed number that we just had voted at the preceding limiting motion, presuming, of course, that it passed. If you are at all not certain of our budget procedure at town meeting, please read the bottom third of page Roman numeral 2 and the top of Roman numeral page 3 in the warrant. That will repeat what I said in more detail. I now recognize Marty Raganese of the Finance Committee for the budget override limiting motion in the first part of Article 3. You flip the mic on.
Not on. Okay.
You got it.
Can you hear this?
Yes.
Move that the amount appropriated under the fiscal year 08 budget not exceed the sum of $75,274,345.
Is there a second? Yes. Ms. Raganese, do you care to add anything?
No.
Anybody else on the Finance Committee care to add anything? Selectman.
Support.
Thank you. Anybody wishing to be heard on the limiting motion? Yes, over there. Could you run the mic over there, please, to that young woman standing?
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. The limiting motion is $75,274,345. The amount printed in the warrant is $75,307,079. What applies? Is there a difference?
Hang on a minute. Someone from the Finance Committee? Ms. Raganese?
Right. There are several $100,000 left between the warrant and the limiting motion, and maybe the town manager can give those exact numbers so that everybody knows.
Town manager, please.
Consult the finance director for a moment. Just a minute, ma'am. We received notice and a request from the Minuteman Regional High School to reduce the number. They came closer to what would be the assessment for the town of Sudbury. That's about $32,000. And that should be the only difference between from the budget that's printed in the warrant and what the limiting motion is in terms of what would be appropriated.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on? Yes, Mr. Tyler. Could you wait for a mic, please?
I'm going to make an amendment. I'd like to come to the front.
actually strike everything after total operating budget shown in the warrant.
He just has the wrong slide. It's the first, slide. Okay, so if you strike the 20% reduction from the non-override total operating budget shown in the warrant, so the beginning in fiscal year 2008, Sudbury senior citizens will begin to obtain a portion of the property tax relief the selectmen promised in response to the 2003 annual town meeting's passage of Article 54. That needs to come off.
Ralph, if you want to leave the part in, a 20% reduction from the override budget shown in the warrant, you can leave that in if you like.
It doesn't matter. I think people have seen it at this point. Okay. I move to amend the limit on the fiscal year 2008 total operating budget to $58,344,596.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Mr. Tyler.
Yes. The reason for this motion is that in 2003, we had a citizens initiative by the people and for the people that asked this town and asked the legislature to provide senior property tax relief. None was forthcoming. In fact, our town officials showed up at the State House in opposition to the action of this town meeting in passing the 50% reduction. Whether that would have made a difference or not, we don't know. But subsequently, in the efforts of the selectmen and others, they promised that they would get a committee together. It was called P-Turk, and they would come up with something significant, meaningful to senior citizens. Nothing has been done. The selectmen this year say they want to do nothing. The finance committee is unprepared to entertain it. So it seems like government by the people and for the people have one choice, and that choice is then to cut the budget. And I am reluctant to be here talking about cutting the budget, but I think it's appropriate for senior citizens, and I'd like to tell you why. The trend in our budget is alarming. This is the history as presented or as available to any citizen on the Massachusetts Department of Revenue website in terms of the average tax bill for the average house in Sudbury from 1988. You can see now that it's almost it's over $9,000, up from $3,000 in 1988. If we look at the next slide, you'll see that for every 10-year period, the cumulative increase from the previous 10 years, starting in 1988 to 98, and then going forward 1 year, that we have anything ranging from 83 to 84% over a decade up to 104% over a decade. And so if you take and you say this is kind of our experience and what does that mean for the future, that gets us to the next slide. And the next slide we see a range. And this range is developed from that lowest 10-year percentage in terms of a cumulative annual percentage increase. And that's the lowest line. So if you say that in the best 10-year period since 1988, that's our future, that says that by 2033, and that's just kind of a convenient number for someone who might be retiring at age 60 and lives to 85, retires at 65, lives to 90, they're going to be paying if they stay in Sudbury, unlikely with these trends, they're going to be paying somewhere like $42,000 at the low end of estimates. At the high end, it's going to be over about $54,000 a year, an unsustainable trend. If you go, if you look at this trend, just to look at that number, the next slide, please, if you will, Mark. This is just the same numbers, basically. It just shows a little different way. The cumulative effect, that is the total money coming out from the wallet of our senior citizens, The next one, the cumulative amount of money, that is adding up each one of those 25 years on the low expectation, and this, by the way, doesn't include the interest that they might have earned had they kept the money in the bank and invested it somewhere. This is just the cumulative amount of money over 25 years. On the low end, it's $550,000. That's the low estimate. The higher estimate is somewhere over $650,000. So again, by the people, for the people, we have an, what I believe to be an unsustainable trend. We're driving seniors out of town. This town has to come to grips with the fact that it can't be business as usual going forward. We need to take some drastic action. I suggest, by the people, for the people, this year, let's take 20% off the budget and see what happens. If you're not willing to go there, allow me to make an amendment, if this fails, to go 15%. Let's see if we can get there. If that fails, let me make an amendment to see if we can get to 10%, because that maybe some people will say 10%. 10% in any budget is possible. Everybody works everywhere. They know that if you have to cut costs, 10% can come out. But if that doesn't pass, 5% surely is possible. So I've prepared all those. But that's my message here. We have a unsustainable situation. The town boards have been unwilling to confront rising and escalating costs of health care. They've been unwilling to do what the private sector has done, which is to shift that burden and share it more equitably with the employees.
Mr. Tyler?
Yes.
Can you tell us how much longer you wish to speak?
I guess I'm not gonna wear out my welcome here. I think I'm okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Does anybody wish to be heard only on this amendment? Does the Finance Committee or the wish to be heard, or are they all set?
Finance Committee is not in favor of this amendment.
Finance Committee is opposed to the motion. Selectmen?
Selectmen are likewise opposed to the motion.
Does anybody in the hall wish to be heard, either in the cafeteria or here in the auditorium? Yes. Could someone? Hang on, please. Can you pass that mic down to this gentleman? Sir, you can stand up, please. They're passing a mic to you.
Well, thank you. I like the moderator. I've been in town for 37 years and seen that same scale of tax increases. So I have my car filled with gas and airplane tickets ready to go to Georgia. In Georgia, there's no school tax for anybody over 55, and the kids still manage to do things. Also, the biggest chunk of our tax money is for schools. I don't think the kids are any dumber today than when I was in school. And heck, I was able, from a little backwater school, to even get a master's degree. So I think it's some of the frills we have, as the like the advanced placement classes, should be paid for as a special fee, just like kids who participate in sports had to pay for sports. And that's one way to start reducing the school budget and put more money back in our tax pockets or spending pockets. You know, now I had to go out and buy a $3 chuck wine from Trader Joe's. So, you know, things are tough. And it's just finished my income taxes, and I saw my taxes from Sudbury rise just like we saw in the graphs shown by Ralph. And I, for one, just implore the tax managers or the town managers to do everything they can and the school committee to start reducing taxes. If I move out, somebody will move into my house with two kids, and the town will have a net loss of at least $10,000 if they figure on $10,000 a year per kid. My school, my taxes are about $10,000, so they'll miss my $10,000, but only have a net loss of $10,000 for one additional child in school. So I just implore you to start reducing taxes. I like to stay here, but the pressures are getting stronger to move. I can buy a nice condo on a golf course in Kennesaw, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta, and have a happy life down there. And miss my friends here, but nevertheless, that's in our consideration if the prices keep on going up or if the taxes keep on continuing. So thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Sir, can you just give your name and address for the record? We missed.
Yes, I'm Thomas Young, 101 Stock Farm Road.
Thank you, sir.
Sudbury, Massachusetts, 01776.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard on the amendment? Yes. Could you pass the mic to the person behind you?
I just I'm not prepared with...
Name and address for
I'm
the record.
I'm sorry. My name is Glenn Merrill Skoloff. I'm at 18 Allen Place. And I'm not prepared with slides, but I'm a little disturbed by the numbers that were put up. They didn't seem to be corrected in any way for inflation, nor were they normalized for housing price costs, which have also gone up. And I think that's a much better way to look at those numbers, because that's actually also real money. That's a real benefit to having stayed in your home in Sudbury as an elderly person, that should you decide to cash out or should you decide to will that onto your children, has much more value than when you bought it. And yes, you're paying more taxes, but those numbers that were shown and the projection that was shown should be normalized to housing prices, certainly, but at least to inflation.
Okay. No clapping, please. No hissing, booing, no audible signs. Thank you. Before we move to the cafeteria, is there anybody else in the auditorium who wishes to be heard on the amendment? Hang on. We're going to have to go around to everyone before we get back to you, Ralph. Anybody else in the auditorium? Fred, if you can hear me, is there anyone in the cafeteria who wishes to be heard on the amendment? No, we're all set. Yes. Can you make name and address for the record, please?
Elaine Jones, 21 Fenbrook Road. Mr. Moderator, isn't the main motion on the overall budget?
No, we're still on the limiting motion.
Yes.
And he's taking the limiting motion, and whatever that number was, he's reducing it to the number you see in front of you.
Isn't the limiting motion on the override?
That's correct.
This is not override?
It doesn't matter what it is. He's reducing the override motion, limiting motion that the Finance Committee made to reduce it to this, if it passes. Yes, on the aisle. All the way on the aisle beside you, Mr. Tyler. Question has been moved. Anybody else wish to speak? We have one speaker here. Anybody else wish to speak? Okay. We have three people who wish to speak. Please consider that when you vote on the motion to call the question. It's a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of calling the question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Thank you. It's unanimous in the cafeteria. It's not quite two-thirds here, but the cafeteria will pull it over two-thirds. I will declare that a vote that... Yes? That's a good question. I'm going to call this hall again, please. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. Please keep your hands up. All those opposed. Anyone against the call to question in the balcony, please raise your hands. Yes, it's way more than two-thirds. The question has been called. We'll now take a vote on the amendment that you see on the screen, that is to reduce, to amend the limit on the fiscal year 2008 total operating budget to $58,344,596. That's the motion. Mark, you can strike the rest of that. Leave that, which is a 20% reduction. So what you see on the screen is the motion that you're voting on now. All those in favor of that motion signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. Thank you. The amendment fails. It got nowhere near a majority. Does anybody else wish to be heard on the limiting motion? Yes. This gentleman here.
Bob Gottberg, 89 Mossman Road. I'd like to ask the selectmen if they have any future plans for any reduction in senior housing, senior tax benefits. Right now, it doesn't seem like anything is coming along. And each year, you're losing more and more seniors because they can't afford it. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that my four-bedroom house, if I leave town, will cost the town $20,000 to $30,000 extra.
That was, sir, the question that you raised, technically speaking, is not germane to the motion in front of the hall. It was germane to the amendment that just failed. But just out of courtesy, I will ask if the selectmen wish to have a quick answer to that or not. It's going to come up on some other articles later in the town warrant, and if you wish to wait till then, that's up to you.
I would answer the question at this point to say that the town does and the selectmen support everything that is available under state law to provide property tax relief for seniors. There are a number of exemption programs that are available, including a deferral of taxes where one doesn't have to pay their taxes. It becomes a loan from the town and a lien against the property, and only has to be paid when the person moves. We do everything that we can consistent with available state law, and we favor and are urging our legislators to address this statewide, because it's not just a Sudbury problem, it is a Massachusetts problem.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to be heard on the limiting motion? Yes, Mr. Tyler.
I move to amend the limit on the fiscal year 2008 total operating budget to $65,637,671, a 10% reduction from the non-override total operating budget.
Does that receive a second? It does, Mr. Tyler.
The argument that a gentleman made about think about your property taxes and the nature of inflation and such as that doesn't wash very well for those who are out of the economy because they're on fixed income and retired. That's exactly why the burden, in fact, should stay with the younger, more transient population of this town, who's part of the operating economy that gets all of these extra bonuses from their salaries and whatnot. So they're part of the increasing wealth of this country. They're taking advantage of it, the wealth that the seniors, in fact, put in place for them to take advantage of. So simply saying, well, look, the price of your house is going up. Well, if you take, $600,000-$700,000 or whatever it is, $800,000-$900,000 out of your house and put it into some investments, and as Mr. Young mentioned, a move to Georgia, and you invest that well, that money will increase probably in the future at as high a rate, if not higher, than your house. Many economists think that some of the more recent inflation in housing prices is unsustainable. Interest rates, as we all know, were unusually low for a number of years because of the Federal Reserve getting the federal funds rate down to about 1%, historically low by centuries of, and that's not likely to happen again. So that tired argument. The fact is that what we have in Sudbury is generally a transient population that comes into this town, takes advantage, picks off the services, and then leaves. And the people one group of people who are left holding the bill are the seniors who love this town and decide to stay. And we are driving them out. One of the reasons that we're needing this override this year is that many of our seniors are abandoning this town and going elsewhere. And if we could make it more attractive for them, they'd likely stay. So the purpose of this 10%, which I told you earlier I'd come back to you with 15%, 10%, 5%. I'll just stop at 10%. I skip 15% because you don't want to hear this all night. I'm not trying to wear out my welcome. But we have to do something. We have to provide senior citizen tax relief. I ask that the hall consider the tax exemptions that we were going to approve in the consent calendar. When we get to those articles, you will see how modest they are and how destitute you have to be in order to take advantage of them. They simply, if you look at the graph, can you put the graph of the first graph of where our property taxes are? Since 2003, when we passed Article 54, the property taxes have increased far more for the average person than any tax relief that's presently available. Add the circuit breakers, add the exemptions. I mean, there might be some people where it wouldn't be, but the bottom line is that there isn't very much available. And when the selectmen say they're waiting for the state, what they mean is they want the state to pay the money. They don't want to shift the burden. Well, why should the senior citizens, why can't we do something like they do in Georgia? When you're over 60 or something like that, you shouldn't be paying that property tax for the school anymore. Simply put, we need to get to the legislature and be allowed to do that in Sudbury as a model for this state. And I hope that those of you who feel likewise will come to town meeting when we get to the Article 30, whatever it is, 4, towards the end of the warrant, so that we can have a further discussion on getting to the legislature and doing something, because our Board of Selectmen is doing nothing to keep seniors in town. They're doing everything possible to drive them out of town. Thank you.
Thank you. No clapping, please. No booing. Does anybody else wish to be heard on the amendment that you see in front of you? Yes. Can we run a mic over to this gentleman here? Can you stand up, sir?
Stephen Gabler, 28 Mossman Road. I don't think of myself as a senior yet, but I guess it's not far off. And I would like to stay in the house I'm in for the rest of my life. But I don't think reducing the budget of the town is a proper way of reducing the burden on seniors, because it doesn't address the question of how the assessments are made. If someone proposed a difference in tax assessments for seniors, which is a shift in the burden, it leaves the budget separate from that. That I would be in favor of.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on the amendment as you see it before the screen? Somebody over there?
Bill Davenport, 12 Blanford Drive. Just a point of clarification first. I think it's, at this point, we're just voting on a 10% reduction in the town budget, and so all the points that we've been talking about, senior tax relief, don't apply to this at all. Is that correct? Okay. Then I would say that I am opposed to a 10% reduction in the town budget. I feel that the services I get will warrant the budget as proposed by the Selectmen and the Finance Committee. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard? We have a motion to call the question in the cafeteria. We will go to that now. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. Thank you. Those opposed? It passes very close to unanimity. So we'll now move on to the amendment itself. It requires a majority to pass. You see it up on the screen. It's to reduce the limiting amount to $65,637,671. All those in favor of the motion as you see on your screen signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Thank you. It fails overwhelmingly. Does anybody else wish to be heard on the limiting motion as made, as you see in front of you, as made by the Finance Committee? I see no hands here, and somebody is calling the question in the cafeteria, so we'll move on to the limiting motion as you see on your screen, which is that the amount, the limiting motion, should not exceed the sum of $75,274,345. All those in favor of the motion, as you see it on the screen, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Yeah, it passes by well over the majority required. We're now I recognize Marty Raganese for the main motion for the budget.
Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the warrant under Article 3 in the column FinCom Override Fiscal Year 08. For fiscal year 2008, except as follows. Minuteman Regional Assessment to be $224,404. The following items to be raised as designated by transfer from available fund balances and interfund transfers. From Ambulance Reserve for Appropriation Account to 200 Public Safety Amount $230,342. From free cash to 900 unclassified benefits in the amount of $1,900,000. From abatement surplus to 900 unclassified benefits in the amount of $238,000. From retirement trust fund to 900 unclassified benefits in the amount of $25,000. The sum of $6,329,855 set forth as Sudbury Public Schools employee benefits to be immediately transferred and added to item 900, town employee benefits, so that the employee benefits total will be $10,333,533 to be expended under the direction of the town manager, and to appropriate the sums received for fire and police officers injured in the line of duty to pay such salaries and wages from insurance coverage provided for that purpose, and to authorize the purchase of equipment funded under this budget by entering into lease purchase agreements.
Is there a second? There is. Before we move into the Finance Committee presentation, could the Finance Committee just tell the hall, please? I see one difference in the numbers in the beginning about Minuteman Regional, that has been reduced from approximately $257,000 to approximately $224,000. And then there's a bunch of inter-fund transfers, and then there's some larger number near the end, about $6 million from public school employee benefits to item 900. Could we have an explanation either from the Finance Committee or... Yes.
I'll let the town manager take the transfers. As far as the $6.3 million, how employee benefits work for the schools, Sudbury Public Schools, is the town, not the schools, are responsible to pay them. So what you're seeing is a transfer of the actual cost that the schools would incur for their benefits being transferred over to the town where they must be paid.
Thank you. Town manager, care to add to that?
No, again, I think it's because the town side, under state law, and the fact that you have to have a treasurer to be able to handle the matter of benefits, and the town is the side of the government that has the treasurer. We do it this way so that we can clearly identify the cost between the two, but it has to be extended according to state law, so that's why we make that transfer and set it up that way. The slide that you asked about before, why do we have these sums of money and then transfer them over? It's simply how we need to be able to use those funds. For instance, the ambulance reserve for appropriation account, we have fees for the ambulance. They're taken into this account. They can only be used for support of the ambulance, but we do have to appropriate those funds to move them in there. Again, the amounts available under free cash, abatement, surplus, and retirement trust. That has just been our tradition to direct them all to the benefits account, benefits line.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson or someone else from the Finance Committee care to make a presentation? Now, this is actually the Finance Committee's overview of the budget that instead of doing it at the beginning of the town meeting, they've chosen to do it here. And speaking will be Bob Jacobson, Chairman of the Finance Committee.
Good evening to everyone. This is the fourth year that I have been presenting the FinCom's budget recommendations to town meeting. And I can tell you that getting up in front of my friends, neighbors, and fellow residents and explaining to them our recommendation to raise taxes is not something I relish doing. The Finance Committee's members are mainly financial professionals, including four seniors and four non-seniors, whose responsibility it is to review the town and school's budgetary and fiscal matters and make recommendations to town meeting using our best judgment. We have fielded many questions and suggestions from taxpayers regarding the budget. Many of these questions we had already asked of the cost centers, particularly those relating to cost-saving initiatives and revenue enhancement. And many of the suggestions are ideas that have already been implemented by the cost centers. In essence, there is no low-hanging fruit still available to be picked that will significantly reduce costs without having an impact on the services provided by the town and the schools. The cost centers have been picking this fruit for the past 4 or 5 years so that any further significant cost reductions under the town's control must entail eliminating personnel. First, let me be clear that the FinCom is recommending appropriation of an override budget. The override amount of $2,519,400 is a result of our projections for revenue needed to support the recommended budget. The governor's proposed budget has Sudbury receiving approximately $500,000 more in state aid than our conservative projections. The House of Representatives and Senate passed their own versions of the budget just this afternoon, increasing the amount to about $570,000 after adjusting for aid to LS being split between Lincoln and Sudbury. This must now go to the governor, who may veto some line items, and then all must agree on a final version including allocations of aid to the 351 cities and towns in the Commonwealth. If this $570,000 in aid above our projections is the final number, then when the Board of Selectmen sets the tax rate in December, it will raise only that amount above the actual state aid we receive to support the appropriated budget. It is the appropriated budget amount approved at town meeting that governs how much each cost center has the authority to spend, not how much revenue is received or raised. The town should expect that the Board of Selectmen will not raise taxes for money the town and schools have not been given the authority to spend by town meeting. However, to be clear, going forward, the approved override amount, even if not fully raised in fiscal year 08, will be available to be raised under a non-override budget in future years. This is something the Finance Committee is very well aware of and will certainly take into consideration in its analysis and deliberations regarding future budgets. Why do we find ourselves in this position, and why does it seem like this occurs year after year? Hopefully many of you have previously read about or heard the FinCom's explanation of Sudbury's budget deficit. While some have referred to it as a euphemism, in fact, it is a reality. Is it the problem? No. It's the effect, not the cause. Our budget issues have more to do with the makeup of our population. 52% of Sudbury's households are occupied by families with children. This is one of the highest percentages in the state. Compare this with Wayland, which has 43%, Concord with 38%, and Lincoln with 36%. Also remember that real estate taxes are calculated based on the appraised value of town properties. Sudbury has fewer non-child households to help support households with children than these other communities. Since the schools comprise 74% of the operating budget, the number of households with children is a key factor impacting Sudbury's budget issues. Additionally, 32% of Sudbury's total population of 18,200 is under the age of 19, also extremely high in comparison with other towns. As an example, while the total populations of Sudbury and Concord are almost identical, as of fiscal year 06, Concord had a K-8 population of 1,978 students, while Sudbury's K-8 population was 3,309. We've also heard the statistic that Sudbury's teachers are paid among the top 5% in the state. The FinCom does not consider this to be the appropriate statistic for comparative purposes. What we feel is more appropriate is how Sudbury compares to its peer communities, and the study the FinCom did 3 years ago concluded that Sudbury's teachers' compensation, including benefits, is not much better than average. These peer communities, almost all of which are probably in the top 5% statewide, are the ones Sudbury competes with in this region's labor market. The requested budgets to provide the services deemed appropriate by the town manager and both school committees yielded a budget deficit of $3.61 million. A level service budget yielded a deficit of $2.95 million. The FinCom recommended budget, which presently results in a deficit of $2,519,400, is essentially a level staff budget with a few additional positions, but not enough to maintain services at current levels, especially when adjusted for continued population growth. This compromise budget is one that slows erosion, but does not prevent it. It is a compromise of the services and class sizes and programs we'd like to maintain, and the tax dollars would have to be paid to support it. The FinCom believes that the recommended override budget would prevent the significant service reductions that would occur under the no override budget. I will leave it to each cost center to present to you tonight what cuts would definitely be made and what other cuts would be considered if the override budget is not approved. Simply put, the contractual cost of maintaining the same staffing levels and keeping up with price escalations in fuel, utilities, special education, and necessary maintenance items is outstripping the 2.5% allowable increase under Proposition 2.5. Hence, we have a structural deficit. 60% of the budget goes towards wages, which are increasing over 5% this year and are a combination of cost of living increases and step increases, which are based upon years of service as a proxy for experience level, most of which were collectively bargained. We have a contract. Benefits and insurance costs comprise 18% of the budget and are going up over 12%. They have been going up in the 12 to 15% range for a number of years and are killing municipal budgets as well as private companies' budgets. Over 80% of the non-override allowable 2.5% increase in the levy is going solely to cover increases in benefits and insurance. It is certainly an area that must be addressed more aggressively in the next rounds of collective bargaining negotiations with the town's unions. The remaining 20% of the budget, which is non-personnel related, is going up 9%, mainly as a result of the expiration of beneficial long-term utilities agreement being replaced by a new agreement at higher rates, as well as the cost of fuel and the cost of special education. Now, what can be done to change this pattern and attack the structural deficit? In the short term, we can examine the option, if it becomes available, of joining the State Group Insurance Commission for health insurance benefits. I say if because the legislature seems to be more afraid of the public employees' unions than the taxpayers. Consolidation of pension asset management and health insurance under existing plans covering the state's union employees could save municipalities tens of millions of dollars. Rather than allowing the municipalities to remove the plan design and selection decision from collective bargaining at the local level, and by making the State Group Insurance Commission the plan choice, leaving only the levels of employee contribution to be negotiated under bargaining, and giving the municipalities the option to save the taxpayers' money, the legislature seems to be headed towards a more tepid version, avoiding confrontation with the public employees' unions and giving them the power to veto the decision by requiring 70% of the employees to consent to in order to allow the municipality to make the change. You need to let your elected state officials know that they represent the taxpayers and should allow this option for municipalities untethered. Over the longer term, the town must continue to try to limit new construction to aged 55-plus housing, become more business-friendly to expand its commercial and industrial base, continue to look for cost efficiencies and revenue enhancements wherever possible, maintain its AAA bond rating, and the cost centers must also aggressively negotiate benefits costs during future collective bargaining. In addition, the Board of Selectmen needs to tap into the expertise of the town's residents to come up with ideas that may not have already been considered, and we suggest they form a budget strategic review committee, including town and school officials, LS and SPS school committee members, FinCom members, a member from the Board of Selectmen, and some at-large members from the town's residents with appropriate expertise, such as employee benefits management, labor negotiations, and financial management. Sudbury has already taken care of many of the town and school's infrastructure needs over the past 10 years at very beneficial reimbursement rates from the state. We expect to be in a downward pattern on our debt service at the same time many of Sudbury's peer towns are wrestling with how to build their town and school's infrastructures under much less beneficial state reimbursement rates. One need only look at Newton and Wayland to see what we mean. Next slide. So what is the tax impact of the FinCom's recommended budgets? The following figures are based on the average home valued at $702,800. The recommended non-override budget will increase taxes by $300, and there will also be a $149 reduction due to a decrease in the debt exemption for a net tax increase of $151 from $9,221 to $9,372. If the override budget passes as recommended by the FinCom, present projections would add another $406, bringing the total to $9,778. If the state aid I discussed earlier materializes, then the amount needed to be raised would go down about $90. If the capital exclusion passes for the purchase of a new fire truck to replace a 20-year-old truck, also recommended by the FinCom, then there would be a one-time increase in taxes of $65, bringing the total to $9,843. The Finance Committee understands the impact of the override budget that it is recommending to you. We have heard and read some comments that we should be able to increase services rather than just fight to maintain what we already have and also avoid overrides. It's very easy to make comments like this, particularly when you don't have to be bothered with the facts and details of the budget. The reality is that while the total population and student population in Sudbury continues to grow, and while benefits, utilities, and fuel costs continue to escalate at current rates, and while Sudbury continues to receive less than 9% of its revenue via state aid, and while it contributes more towards the health insurance costs of its current and retired employees than in the private sector, and while 94% of its real estate taxes comes from the residential sector, then an override budget will be the only way to fund existing service levels. It may be painful to hear. You may not like hearing it. You may not want to believe it. But sometimes the truth doesn't fit what you want just because that's how you want it. When Sudbury's taxpayers decide they no longer wish to or financially can't support an override budget, they need to understand that in doing so, they must also agree to or be resigned to accept reductions in services, elimination of programs, and increased class sizes. The question will then be, is the service or program you want or need the one that is impacted, or is it your child's class that is no longer an acceptable size to you? Now, regardless of how one votes, the FinCom wants it to be clear that there is no right and wrong answer. Each vote is based on an individual's opinion or circumstance, and one has the right to vote as one sees fit. Accepting the fact that someone's opinion may be contrary to your own is an embracing of the democratic principles that make our country and our town great. Whether or not the override budget passes, Sudbury will still be a great place to live. The Finance Committee unanimously recommends the override budget in the warrant in the amount of $77,653,064. Thank you.
Before we're now going to have presentations from the school committees, and before I call on LS, is there Chuck back there in AV? Is there anyone from building maintenance around who could maybe turn down the heat in the auditorium? Great. LS. While we're waiting, we'll take a name and address for the record.
Eileen Glubsky, 53 Thompson Drive. Thank you all for being here this evening, and furthermore, I'd like to thank you for supporting the override at the polls. I look forward to your affirming it this evening. The first thing that I would like to go over with you is the funding sources, because I think it's important to have an appreciation for that when you think about the regional school district. Our funding sources include about 9.2% of state aid. Now, I think it's important to remember when we talk about state aid that the average state aid in communities in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is 41%, and that's according to a recent report by the Mass Budget and Policy Center. 1.9% of our revenue comes from receipts, athletic fees, fees for parking, and the like. A whopping 88.8% of the funds to run Lincoln Sudbury comes from the towns of Lincoln and Sudbury through the property taxes. This compares with the state average of 59%. The communities do pay this based on a three-year rolling average of enrollment. This year, Lincoln enrollment increased slightly, so they're paying it slightly more, which is the first time it's happened in the time that I've been on the school committee. I'd like you to take a look at cost per student in $1995 dollars. The top line here talks about what our actual dollars are, and we have normalized it $1995 dollars so that you can see our cost per student has actually gone down over time. We have attempted to be as efficient as possible. I think Mr. Jacobson talked about low-hanging fruit, and there really isn't any of that, and I think you can see this in how our cost per student has gone down. Furthermore, according to the NEASC, we're in the 10-year accreditation process. Over the last 10 years, our student population has increased 73%, and our teachers have only increased 58%. And a no-override budget would show that gap to only become wider. It would severely limit our ability to meet the needs, both academically and socially, of our growing student population. It's really not a secret where the cuts would have to come from. We grow students at this school. It is a labor-intensive process. We would likely lose 6 professional positions, 1 support position, and this is on top of the loss of 1 administrative position over the last few years. Obviously, in a no-override budget, class sizes would go up. I chose to show you what would happen in English classes because I think it's probably the most tangible area to take a look at. We would go from approximately 30% of our classes being over 26 students to nearly 70% of our classes being over 26 students. Now, if you think of a class and you say you have 26 students and the next year you have 30 students, it doesn't sound like a big difference. But in English, particularly, it can be a huge difference for a teacher. Because one of the things that we really pride ourselves on here at Lincoln Sudbury is making good writers out of the students. And as someone in the workforce who hires people, I have to tell you I value good writers tremendously. And in order to create good writers at Lincoln Sudbury, our teachers need to have the time to thoughtfully and carefully grade papers. A teacher teaching 4 sections of English with 4 students increase in each section would have an additional 16 papers to grade for each assignment that he or she would make. I don't think it would be a surprise to see that the kinds of assignments might decrease in the number of pages a teacher might ask for. The ability of a teacher to thoughtfully review an additional 16 papers might be compromised. So I will say I think our teachers do their very best in difficult situations, but I know that we all want our students to gain these skills. We'd see similar increases in all of our classes. One of the areas where we would have a significant increase as well as our counseling load. Our target counseling load is 190 students for each counselor, which is still a pretty large. Currently, we're at 205. With a no-override budget, it would go to 208 students for each counselor. This would mean less direct contact with students. It would compromise their ability to do academic advising for students. It would compromise their participation in the college application process, which is very important to many of the families here in Sudbury. And it would also compromise their ability to be available to students for personal and crisis counseling, which is an area of counseling that has really grown tremendously from the time when many of us were in school. Guidance counselors are called upon to do a tremendous amount of personal and crisis counseling within this community. Programs that we have would have to be drastically reduced or eliminated, or our fees increase. And I would remind you that our fees are already among the highest in the state. A no-override budget would force us to eliminate cheerleading, gymnastics, boys' JV ice hockey, JV tennis for boys and girls, and all intramurals. Just to give you a sense of where the money for the override budget would go, approximately 6.4% would go for administration.
You, 1 more minute? Is that okay with the hall? 1 minute? Fine. Go ahead.
Utilities and facilities, 9.8%. General education, the bulk of it, 66.4%. And special education is mandated by state law that we provide, 17.4%. The last few months have taught us that LS is more than a school. It is a community. We rely disproportionately on property taxes to pay for this school, and I encourage you to talk to your state reps about that. We know this community values the education provided to our children. We ask your support of the override to ensure we have the resources to best meet the needs of all of the students at Lincoln Sudbury. Thank you.
Thank you. Actually, you didn't go over your time limit, but I'm told by the superintendent he wishes to say a word. John Ritchie, superintendent of LS.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I could spend all night thanking the town of Sudbury for the support that you've given us during this very difficult year, but I won't do that. Instead, I would just like to thank Eileen Glovsky, who is retiring from the LS School Committee this year after 6 years of tremendous service on behalf of staff, administration, and students at Lincoln Sudbury. Her work has been profoundly important to us, and I want to thank her on behalf of myself, the school committee, the staff, and really the community for just a great job. Thank you so much, Eileen.
Thank you.
K through 8, Superintendent John Brackett.
Good evening. I'm John Brackett, the Superintendent of Sudbury Public Schools. And I'm going to, in the brief minutes that I have available, I'm going to spend most of my time trying to outline the impact on our schools of the budgets that you have before you this evening. Mr. Jacobson and Ms. Glovsky have done a wonderful job of talking about some of the structural issues that certainly apply to the K-8 system equally and certainly applicable. As we went into the budget year this year, we knew several things. One of that is that, as you've heard, our enrollment continues to grow. The demand for the service continues to rise. In general, for FY08, our enrollment will grow as a district about 2%. Interestingly enough, that is much of that is now moving into the middle school, where the enrollment at Curtis next year will grow about 66 additional students, or about 6.4%. So the structural deficit that Mr. Jacobson aptly outlined is the same as what the school system is facing as we move forward. In short, the cost of what we are required to do and what we are expected to do is simply rising faster than the revenues that we have available. In order to just maintain what we currently have, with no additional programs and no additional staff, it requires about 5 to 6% growth each year. Without an override this year, our budget would grow at 1.59%, or about $405,000. The deficit from what we have to move to that level means a gap of about $1,040,000. So the solutions that Mr. Jacobson outlined of either raising revenues, which you have before you tonight, or reducing services, which is also obviously an option, is before us at SPS as well. With the override, Sudbury Public Schools will garner about $1.2 million from the override. It does not provide level service. We will not be able to add any additional programs or provide any other growth. We will be allowed through this amount to add two additional teachers, two FTE teachers, which we will deploy to the Curtis Middle School, where most of the growth is occurring. Class sizes will grow, but marginally. And about 5% more of the sections in the school will be above our class size guidelines with the override than what we currently have. But that still is limited at about 14%. With the non-override budget, as I mentioned, the deficit that we would be facing is $1,040,000. And so that the effort is to how do we balance that? There is no low-hanging fruit, as already been mentioned. 78% of our budget, 78% of our budget is in staff. We are labor-intensive. Of the remaining 22% of our budget, in reality, only 5 to 6% of that is truly discretionary. So there is no way of balancing or cutting $1,040,000 out of our $25 million budget without impacting staffing levels and impacting class sizes. So how would we do it? Just to show you magnitude, One scenario, if we did only classroom teachers, and believe me, that's not the scenario, I'm just trying to show you magnitude, it would affect 21 to 26 teachers to get to $1 million. And the difference is because of whatever the salary is of the people who are laid off. As I said, that's not the scenario that we are looking at. What we are looking at is a scenario that has approximately, in the same proportion as our total budget, 80% of it coming from staff and 20% from expenditures and expenses. What that means is in the elementary school, a minimum of 5 teachers and possibly 7 or more classroom teachers or specialist teachers. Specialist meaning art, music, librarians, etc. At the middle school, 3 teachers with up to 5. We could have to eliminate our elementary instrumental music program and move it to a fee-based after-school program. We would eliminate 1 teacher who currently serves as a curriculum specialist, a custodial maintenance staff member, and 1.5 in a reorganization of our central office support staff. There would also be cuts in this expense side, and as you can see, it would include much of our technology budget, most of our equipment budget, after-school budgets or buses at Curtis Middle School, the new math clubs, math teams, and other enrichment activities that we just added this year that are so promising, and others that I have on the screen that I won't take the time. So it would not be an easy cut. That's what we would be facing with the non-override budget if that would be the decision of the hall tonight. On behalf of the students and staff of Sudbury Public Schools, I want to thank all of the voters of this town for approving the override last Monday. I can tell you that the staff at Sudbury Public Schools was not only thankful, but truly inspired by the continual show of support. I know this doesn't come as any surprise, but I ask you to consider the implications that laid out before you this evening and vote in support of the override budget as presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Maureen Valente will give the budget for the town.
Thank you and good evening again. As the moderator said, I'm here just to give some brief explanatory information on the town budget as laid out under the override budget in the warrant. I want to explain the budget priorities that the Board of Selectmen and I use as we put together the town budget. I'll run through them quickly. Maintain the high-quality town services at the best possible cost that we can, to keep working to achieve the annual and the long-term goals of the Board of Selectmen. To deal with the increases in utilities, supplies, and contracted services, to address areas where expectations from residents are very high in Sudbury. Some examples: library, information availability to you, the condition of our roads and our streets, snow and ice removal, traffic issues. I could go on and on. To address areas where we've been hit hard, really hard, with mandates, public health, environmental, personnel areas, inspection requirements, just to name a few. And to keep up with the financial policies of the Board of Selectmen, particularly in the areas for our planning for our capital needs, preservation of our reserves, and maintaining our AAA credit rating. For those that don't know or haven't paid close enough attention, just to explain, the town is really comprised of 30 different departments. I know this is too small for you to see. Those are in the warrants to go through. A whole lot of different things we do within those 30, but the one point I'd make is there's a number of them, I'll say later, that have just one professional person plus a part-time secretary. Part of what's been on our goal to try to address is that for a long time, to be able to go forward on dealing with that. In terms of the specifics of the FY08 budget set forth under the override budget, these are the things that we would restore under the override budget that were cut under the non-override budget. In the area of public safety, to be able to retain our staffing levels by keeping the overtime needed to fill open shifts for police and fire departments. This is not so much the injured on duty, but just sick and vacation and things like that. Those are the back, overtime fills those back shifts so we can keep the stations open, we can keep the sector cars running. In public works, we had to cut, under the non-override,
below level service, so under the override, just restoring those money for road services, keeping all the snow and ice, all those different things to keep with the costs of how those have gone up. And across the board in other departments, in terms of various town election, town meeting, equipment, contracts, computers, we went through and cut a great deal into that, restoring that. Two items quickly I want to run through what we're trying to do under the override as well. I mentioned that we're trying to tactically and strategically put in hours in some areas that are just overwhelmed with either the workload, the mandates, a few more hours, 5 hours a week for the Council on Aging van driver, more hours in the engineering to put some summer hours there, and in four departments, Board of Health, Finance, Budget Office, Personnel / Benefits, and Conservation, just to target in a few more hours, 15 hours per week for each one of those. And I can explain later some questions why those are particularly taken a look at. And to add more hours to the library so that they can, Saturday when they're busiest, and just be able to be open a few other hours like most of the libraries around us are. And then finally, to start with three new initiatives that we've wanted to do for a very long time. Well, one of them we just really need, and that's the service contracts on our some critical town servers. We're trying to do more 24/7. We're trying to allow you to pay your bills online, register for recreation online, do a variety of things. We need to keep these servers going. We need 5,500 for maintenance contracts on them, service contracts. To restore tree planting for those we've had to take down for public safety reasons when they're diseased or when they're damaged, we haven't been able to do back planting. We'd like 5,000 to at least start doing that. And to create a GIS program by hiring a part-time GIS coordinator. GIS is Geographic Information Services, and more complicated than I can explain in 5 minutes, but I am happy to give more on that if someone has questions. I have a map of all the communities around us, and we're like one of the few, or if not the only one in this area, that really has not put forth a GIS program. There's tremendous productivity savings. We need to be able to get going on that. Mirroring the slide that John Brackett prepared for you and just trying to show it wages versus all the other costs, you can see how they're going up, 3.9% on the salaries, expenses. Town services tend to use more on the expenses because we use the fuel and we use the materials for snow and ice and that kind of thing. Ours is weighted a little bit more in that direction. And finally, we just want to continue the ongoing priorities of the town and emphasize three things that are very critical to me and to the board. Importance of retaining our department heads and our other staff. They're our current and our future knowledge and our capabilities. We've had a lot of retirements, Jan Silva, some others left, and all we can see is the institutional memory that's gone, that's taken us so long to bring back. We've got very few, we run very lean on our staff, but we want to take care of them and make sure that we can keep all that knowledge and information they have. We need to keep emphasizing the importance of maintaining investing in our capital, both our facilities and our vehicles, and continue our efforts to improve efficiencies and contain costs. Thank you.
Thank you. I will start by reading the budgets in numerical order by title. If anyone has a motion to amend or a question, just raise your hand. For example, I will say 200, public safety. Does anyone have a motion to amend or a question involving 200, public safety? If someone has a motion to amend, it must be in one of the two forms. I move to increase 200, public safety to the sum of X and to reduce, for example, 600, culture and recreation to the sum of Y, and those two numbers must be the same. Or, the second way you may do a motion to amend is I move to reduce, for example, 200 public safety to the sum of X. A motion simply to increase a line item will not be accepted. This is so because of consideration of the budget that we're about to start has been preceded by a vote limiting the total budget amount. It was a not-to-exceed number. So if you try to increase a line item without decreasing another line item, you will be violating the limiting motion that we just passed. We will vote. We will first debate and vote on each of those amendments, if there are any. We will arrive at the end of this process with a main motion, as it may have been amended, and we'll then vote on it. So if you will look to your last column on page 6 of your warrant. With the exception of Minuteman Regional Assessment, that number has been reduced in the main motion from 257,138 to 224,404.
Otherwise, Mr. Jacobson, am I correct in assuming that if I now run down all the line items from 100 through 900, we should be looking at the last column on page 6, which is the Finance Committee override fiscal year 08? Thank you. He answered yes, that's correct. So, we're going to start again. If anyone has any motion to amend or any questions on a specific line item, I'm about to go through them one at a time. And I will ask Fred Pryor in the cafeteria, if anyone there has a question or a motion to amend, to call me on the walkie-talkie, and we will entertain that. So we're going to start off with schools. That includes all the schools, the public schools, employee benefits, LS, Minuteman, et cetera. Does anyone have any questions or motion to amend on the schools? Way back in the rear of the main floor of the auditorium. Can someone get him a mic all the way back?
Mike Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. Been in town for over 15 years now. I have three kids in the school system. I have a question as it relates to the school budgets. And the information we're asked to consider, you know, obviously with having kids in school, class size is a huge issue for us. So my question first for K through 8 is the instruction full-time equivalent are 349. So the student to full-time equivalent instruction ratio is less than 10 to 1, but we have a classroom size problem. One of the concerns I have is in looking at alternatives, the first thing being considered for cut is classroom teachers, not non-classroom instructional FTEs. And I'm curious as to why that would be the approach. That's for K through 8.
Hang on a second, please. Can someone from K through 8 answer that question, please? Or do you need a repeat? Yeah, can you, not the whole statement, but just the question?
Sure. The question is with a student to instructional FTE ratio of less than 10 to 1, why in a tight budget or a non-override budget would you first cut classroom teachers and not non-classroom instructional FTEs?
Superintendent Brackett for an answer.
Yes, I think the numbers that you're looking at would be total employees. Not total classroom teachers.
Excuse me. Let me just clarify where I was getting it from. That might help.
Sir, we don't do back and forth here.
Okay.
We let him finish, and then if
sure.
your question's not answered, we'll give you the mic again.
What I, if I understand the question correctly, we, in terms of actual classroom size, we have 144 classroom teachers, 144 FTEs. For the 3,377 students, the actual, with the additional two in the override, would be 146. So the actual class size is around 21.5 to 1 in a regular classroom, not the 10. In terms of the remaining part of your question, I believe is why does the cuts that we talked about include classroom teachers and not start outside the classroom? It's because, again, as we look at this, many of the programs are related directly to the classroom. And so to the extent that when we are talking about total budget and we're looking at staffing, the majority of the budget is in our professional staff. In order to get to $1 million, there's just not enough non-professional staff to go there. What you end up doing is you cut so deep that you're eliminating programs and services. And so what we end up doing then is start to build up, we start to look at the classes that we think we can, we have to maintain, and then address that the rest through class size reductions.
Okay, thank you. Just one follow-up question. The information in the warrant indicates that the total instruction
full-time equivalent positions are 349.24, and the total teaching positions are 144. So that's a difference of 205 FTE. So to support 144 full-time equivalent teachers, it takes 205 additional instructional FTEs. Is that
it would information? It would include special education, the entire special education program. It would include librarians. It would include physical education teachers, all of our unified arts teachers, counselors, psychologists. So there are a significant number of professional staff outside of the regular classroom teacher, but they are all providing direct services. Anybody in that number is providing direct services to children.
Right. The special education is 107 FTEs. Right. Correct. Okay.
Correct.
I'm still having trouble reconciling the numbers, but thank you. On to the high school. I guess the concern and the example used was English would go from 30% of the classes having 26 or more students to 70% of the classes having 26 or more students in a non-override budget, and that we would see similar increases in all of our classes. Again, a similar kind of question. The student-faculty ratio at Lincoln Sudbury is 10 to 1. The student-teacher ratio is 12 to 1. But we have class size problems. So I guess my question is, how do you reconcile the low student-teacher ratios with 70% of the classes under a non-override budget having 26 or more students?
Thank you. Can we have someone from LS? Superintendent Ritchie.
The ratio that you mentioned in the latter part of your question of 12 to 1 adult-student ratio really is a misleading statistic. That represents the total number of adults in a professional capacity in the school as against the number of students, and that would include administrators, librarians, many people who don't teach in the classrooms. So that's why that ratio appears to be so favorable. It includes many, many people who have certainly important interactions with students, but not direct classroom interactions. The class size numbers and the average numbers in a high school are admittedly difficult to, it's a story that's not difficult to tell. It's ratios that really vary from department to department, because the needs of students in particular areas of the curriculum vary so greatly. You might have a number of, you might have 18 students in an advanced course for seniors, and there are only 18 students, for instance, who want to take that course and can take that course, so you have to offer it. Whereas in another course, for instance, in English, where the class assignments tend to be more homogeneous, would tend to be higher. So it's the averages across the discipline really vary tremendously. I'm not sure I've gotten to the point of your question. Do you want to?
The question was just having difficulty reconciling it, but the statistics, the 10 to 1 student to faculty ratio is off the high school profile. The 12 to 1 student to teacher ratio is off the report card, which I think is a state report that gets filed, uses a number of 136 teachers. And the question was if most of the classes would see increases similar to the English class example, how do you reconcile 12 to 1 student to teacher ratio to as many as 70% of the classes having 26 students?
Well, I'm not sure I can answer that, but I can tell you that the teacher to student ratio is certainly not 12 to 1.
I'm sorry, student to teacher ratio, I got it backwards.
Is not 12 to 1. The number of students that teachers are responsible for here, take all of the classes that the teacher teaches, the number of students he or she is responsible for, has increased over the last 3-4 years by 15-20%. So teachers now, on average, whereas before they may have had 82 or 83 students overall that they're responsible for, that number in most cases is now in the low to mid-90s.
Thank you, Dr. Richard.
And that would be a function of the number of classes they're teaching a day.
Sir?
Yes.
You need to be recognized again if you wish to speak again. Okay? So we're going to go on. We need to give
another
speaker a chance. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to be heard on the line item for the schools? I see no one here in the auditorium. Fred, if there's anyone in the cafeteria wishes to speak, could you call me? No one in the cafeteria. We're going to move on to line up. I'm sorry, there's someone here. Could you give that young lady a mic? They'll pass the mic into you if you like.
Hi, my name is Carrie Carter, and I live at 123 Belcher Drive. My comments tonight are in favor of the school override, and I'd like to direct them to those people that are on the fence. Specifically, I am in strong support of the comments that have been made tonight that the override is fiscally responsible. If you read, if you happen to see the Boston Globe this past weekend, probably saw on the front page the story that 50 other cities and towns in this state are facing the same challenge that we are. So we're not alone. And while we're not alone, I would say that our situation is unique. We've heard from members of the school committee and the finance committee talking about a structural deficit. For me, that phrase is a little bit hard to wrap my brain around. I think of it in a little bit simpler terms, more like a perfect storm. Situation that we have. You remember that book or the movie, or you were here in 1981? Perfect storm was the convergence of a couple of key storms coming together. We have a couple of key issues coming together that people referenced. The first item there was the 94% of our tax revenues coming from property taxes. We only have 6% coming from industrial sources. The second point converging was mentioned as well. The 52% density, 52% of our homes in this town have kids in them, compared to neighboring towns of, I think it was Lincoln, 36%, Concord, 38%, and Wayland, 43%. What this means for us is that we only have one way to support these kids, and that is through property taxes. As we've heard, it's impossible to maintain current levels of services with the 2.5% cap. Could we make this choice? We absolutely could make the choice to do this, but it is the wrong thing to do. It would be a big mistake. The schools in Sudbury are a defining characteristic of this town. I grew up on the North Shore. 30 years ago, this town was known for its school systems, and it still is today. It's part of what makes Sudbury who and what we are. It's the primary reason that a lot of us moved here. We've heard about how our schools would be affected. I want to call out a couple of statistics or likely scenarios of student-teacher ratios that were presented in prior presentations by Dr. Brackett. Some of the scenarios that have been outlined in terms of student-teacher ratios. The Haynes School, the third grade, would see, in all likelihood, 27 children per classroom. Nixon School, where my kids go, the fifth grade, 28 kids per classroom. Curtis would be the hardest hit. The scenario there that has been laid out as a potential if we don't pass this override, sixth grade, 28 kids per teacher. Seventh grade, 27 kids per teacher. And the eighth grade, 30 kids per teacher. Now, I don't have an eighth grader. But hearing that, 30 kids per teacher, makes me a little queasy. That's a pivotal year. Now, people without children, you're probably wondering why you should support this. One simple reason, property values. Somebody referenced earlier that there are young families moving into this town. those young families are keeping our property values high. What hasn't specifically been talked about quite a bit is how much this would mean to us. Somebody did reference it earlier. I don't recall who it was. But this override would cost us about $400 per year. That equates to $8 a week. $8 a week. It's worth it. I urge you to support this override. Do it for our kids. Do it for your property values. And do it to support the long and proud history we have in Sudbury of having one of the best school systems in this Commonwealth and, some people would say, in this country. Thanks.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the schools? I see no hands. There are hands. I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
Ivan Lubash, 25 Barber Road. I don't have any answers. I know there are problems. But I think the speaker just raised an excellent question in reverse. How do you keep your seniors in town to keep the school population down, to keep the cost down? At the same, right now, and property values have gone up. Yes, my property has gone up, but I have to pay taxes, and I have a relatively limited income nowadays. My pension hasn't increased in 15 years. Wasn't much to begin with. So something discreet, definite has to take place. We have to find a way of getting Sudbury to fit into the same format as Wayland, Concord, and Lincoln, where you have fewer students per household. I don't know the answers. I just want to raise a blessed question. Thank you.
Now, yes, Ms. Carl. Is this still on the schools, or we?
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. The lady on Belcher Drive gave a very good presentation, and she used a very important number, class size of 28. That is the optimum class size where you balance educational efficiency with the ability of the community to pay for the school. And our schools, way back when we got our great reputation, our temporary buildings were a deduction of 20% from the state limit of 35 to class size of 28. The classroom was built to hold 30. And we did get that advantage of that drop from the state limit of 35 to 28, that 20% drop. Then when we had the declining enrollments, we said, well, when we had riffed more than 40% of our teachers, and we're going to go towards riffing 60%, at that point we decided that we wanted to hold on to our really good teachers. And so we decided to increase class size. And I can recall Phyllis Prager telling us, don't you parents expect these smaller class sizes on the long term? If we get a building boom, we're going back to 28. Some years ago, I happened to be riding on a train from Washington to home. Train from Philadelphia to home. And I have to pick up a Washington newspaper on Labor Day weekend. And the best schools down in Maryland have come to the conclusion that the optimum class size is, guess what, 28. Now, there's only one way we're going to stop the vicious cycle, and that is if those who came here those whose children have recently graduated from high school and are in college, stay in town. Those folks have, $50,000 a year for tuition now? The only way that we can keep the town stable is if those folks don't move out. If they don't move out, other people won't be moving in. And the way you do that is to say we do have to make a balance, and with this class size, we have the argument that, oh my, the class size is going to be 28, which is the recognized optimum class size. I'm not getting upset about it.
Thank you. We all set with schools? We can move on now? Okay. We're now going to move on to line 200. Okay. Could you stand, and can someone be kind enough to give him the mic?
Mark Ritz, 52 Easy Street. Just a very simple question. We had some discussion earlier as to the number of full-time equivalent teachers in both K through 8 and also in LS. I am just wondering what the numbers of administrators are in both K through 8 and LS, non-classroom administrators.
Great, thank you. Any other questions, or that's it?
That's all.
Great. Can we have K through 8 give us an answer, and then I'll ask LS for the same answer.
I'll try to be a little more succinct than my last answer. In terms of building administrators, we have at the middle school, we have one principal and three grade administrators. It's the way the school is arranged. At the elementary level, we have one principal at each of the four elementaries. At the two larger elementaries, at Loring, we have an assistant principal, and at Noyes, we have an assistant principal. The enrollment at Noyes is about 700. The enrollment at Loring is about 600. There are not assistant principals at Haynes and at Nixon, even though the enrollment is at or very close to 500. At the middle school, we have, as I mentioned, the one principal and three house administrators. Those are the building administrators. That's the extent of it. At the central administration level or district-wide level, we have a superintendent, an assistant superintendent, a director of business, and a director of special education.
Thank you. LS, please.
We at Lincoln Sudbury have 9 administrative positions, 1 superintendent principal, 4 housemasters, 1 coordinator of curriculum and instruction, 1 director of student services, which oversees special education and counseling, 1 director of athletics and activities, and 1 director of finance and operations. And as Ms. Glovsky pointed out, that is 1 fewer position, administrative position, than we had 4 years ago.
Thank you. The issue has been from the cafeteria. The question has been called on the issue of the schools. Does anybody else wish to be heard before I call a question? I see none, so we'll move on to line item 100, general government. Does anybody wish to be heard on general government? I see no hands in the auditorium. If I've missed you, please shout. Anybody in the cafeteria? No. We're going to move on now to line item 200, public safety. Does anybody wish to be heard on public safety? I see no one in the auditorium, unless I've missed someone. How about the cafeteria? Can we have them speak, please? Chuck, can we have the folks speak in the cafeteria now on the mic? No, go ahead. Let's try one of the mics there.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Mara Houston. I'm Peckham Road. Last year at town meeting, we increased the public safety budget to allow for an additional police officer to help with the school crossings. I've never seen a police officer at school crossings. And in the discussion later in the warrant, they talk about having a level of staffing since 97. So I'm curious about that.
Thank you. Either town manager or police chief?
I'd have to look back. I believe what we talked about was having one for traffic. We've been trying to create two dedicated traffic daytime, not sector cars and officers, one for the morning, one for the afternoon, so that they are at times. For instance, I drive by Nixon every morning. I'd say about once or twice a week I see that traffic car out front on there. But to try to be assigned as needed, sometimes when the chief assigns, if the neighborhood asks for traffic counts or specific things to be set up, they will have them there. I don't believe it was crossing guards. They're always in their vehicle, and especially for traffic, because there's been so many complaints and concerns about traffic in the community. To the extent we're at full staffing, we keep those going. When we are down with staffing, we just had a retirement. As I said, we've had some injuries. That's where we've had to pull back to go back into the vector cars, sector cars. Chief, I don't know if there's anything you would add or anything. Okay.
Nope. Police Chief Peter Fadgen.
Peter Fadgen, Chief of Police. We are not assigned, or an officer is not assigned, to school crossing positions. Those are, I believe, all under the school department. We do fill in emergencies if we have an officer available, but we do not man those positions.
Thank you, Chief. We're going to move on now to line item 400, Public Works. Anybody in the auditorium or the cafeteria have any question on Public Works? I see none here. Are there any in the cafeteria? None there. We're now going to move on to line item 500, Human Services. Would anyone like to make a comment, a question, or a motion to amend? I see no one in the auditorium. Anyone in the cafeteria? No one there either. Line item 600, Culture and Recreation. Does anyone have a question, comment, or motion? I see none here in the auditorium, cafeteria. None there either. We're now on to line item 900, Town Employee Benefits. Anybody have a question, comment, or motion? None in the auditorium. Cafeteria? Can we have that question? Could you have that person go to the mic? And can I have a name and address for the record, please?
Ken Bettenhauser, Pratt's Mill Road. My question is, I'm here to vote for the override, but looking at the medical insurance in particular, it's an increase of over 25%. And although health insurance costs are going up, they're going up at a rate of 10 to 12%. My concern is, almost $1 million of the budget is going towards medical costs. And it seems like if the town employees would take additional higher copays, pay a higher contribution of benefits, that we could potentially save some money. So I think it's something that I just have a question about. Have the school dealt with the unions to help them better understand that it's crippling our budget by having us absorb increases that are much higher than what the industries are facing, as well as other schools? Thanks.
Before you leave, can we have your name for the record? We missed it here in the auditorium.
Sure. Ken Bettenhauser.
Thank you. And I'm going to call on the chair of the Finance Committee, Robert Jacobson, for an answer to that question.
I don't know where the 25% comes from, because benefits are going up in the 12 to 14% range, unless questioner is taking the benefits that are being allocated back to the town for the schools, but just dividing it by the town's payroll and not including the school's payroll as well, which is why it may be twice as high as it actually is. As we explained before, the town pays the benefits. We, a few years ago, were able to convince everybody to segregate their benefits according to what the cost was to maintain that personnel. That's just so we can control the budget and compare apples to apples. Then what happens is, legally, the amount of benefits payable for the school has to go back into the benefits line item for the town, because they're the ones who are responsible for paying the benefits of the school teachers for the K through 8.
Thank you. And we'll now move on to line item 900, townwide operations and transfer accounts. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Can you bring the mic, that young lady who will please stand up? And give us your name and address, please.
Miley Houlihan, 82 Thunder Road. I'm not sure if this comes under exactly this budget, but it's been mentioned that the town only has a 6% commercial tax base, and that's one of the reasons why the tax burden is so high. What resources have the town devoted to increasing the commercial tax base?
Increasing the commercial tax base? Is that the question?
To attracting, you know, businesses. I mean, you mentioned one business coming into town.
Thank you. Yes, who'd like to take that question? Chair Bill Keller.
Well, first off, we were limited in terms of our zoning. There's only so many areas that are zoned for commercial activity, and that's a historic point about the town. In terms of encouraging more, I think the climate is one thing, and the permitting process in town, and selectmen over the last several years have been trying to streamline permitting processes and convincing our boards in town that we need to work with the commercial community to encourage more investment within the town. So that's one way. The senior residential communities is another that gets results in additional tax revenues without children in the schools. Sewerage on Route 20 is another issue that we have been working toward. Most of our commercial activity is along Route 20. We are on septic systems that limits the amount of commercial activity and limits the growth of the businesses. We have been working for a number of years to try to bring sewers into Route 20, which we believe will increase the commercial activity on that road.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, we'll move on to the last line item, which is town debt service. Anybody have any comment or questions or motion on town debt service? I see none here in the auditorium. Anything in the cafeteria? Thank you. We're now going to move on to the main motion, and you can see it on your view graph. This is the, Mark, this is the second half of it. Can we see the first half? Great. So we're going to vote on the main motion as it was made by the Finance Committee, because it has not been amended. It's a majority vote, and I will ask all those in favor, please raise your cards. All those opposed. It's way more than two-thirds here in the auditorium. How is it in the cafeteria? Way more than two-thirds there. I declare that it passes, because it gets well more than the majority required. We're now going to move on to Article 4, which is the police station, and we will have Maureen Valente, the town manager, make the motion. Bill Keller up here will make the motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $8,200,000 to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee for the purpose of constructing a new police headquarters and appurtenant structures on town-owned land adjacent to the existing fire headquarters, purchasing additional equipment, technology, and furniture, landscaping, and all expenses connected therewith, including professional engineering and architectural services, and preparation of plans, specifications, and bidding documents, supervision of work, relocation, and borrowing costs and expense. And to raise the appropriation, the treasurer, with the approval of the selectmen, is authorized to borrow $8,200,000 under General Laws, Chapter 44, Section 7. All appropriation hereunder to be contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 debt exclusion in accordance with General Laws, Chapter 59, Section 21C, and to petition the legislature to enact special legislation extending the time for calling an election to coincide with the fall 2007 congressional election.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does. Maureen Valente, Town Manager, to make a presentation. But Maureen, before you start, I have my usual question. I can see that there are two differences, at least between this article as in the motion and in from the article in the warrant. One is that you added a provision in the motion that is subject to a Proposition 2.5 debt exclusion. And the other difference I see are those last several words about petitioning the legislature for special legislation. So if either, perhaps maybe in the beginning of your presentation, one of you can explain that, and then one of you should also explain why are we voting on this motion at $8.2 million given the ballot question results on last Monday on this issue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Let me start by addressing those questions, and then Maureen and I will be moving through the presentation along with Chief Fagin. This is a debt exclusion. A debt exclusion requires an affirmative vote both at a town election or special election and a town meeting. There is no requirement that they be in any either particular order. Either one can occur first. There is a requirement that they be within a certain time frame of each other. We, in the town election that just passed, this exclusion failed by 56 votes out of a total of 3,600 votes. There were 128 blanks on the ballot. We believe the inference we draw is that really can't draw a great inference from those very close numbers. We believe this project is still financially prudent and appropriate for the town and financially responsible. And so we are asking tonight that a vote be taken at town meeting to approve this, subject to a subsequent vote at the polls. Our representative in Congress, Marty Meehan, has announced his retirement, although not officially. The official announcement is coming soon, and that is going to require a special town election. Special town elections cost about $7,000 or $8,000, so we're hoping to save that $7,000 or $8,000 by combining this debt exclusion onto the vote for Marty Meehan's replacement. We'd like to get into the reasons for this, the reasons for the police station. Our police station, if we are at the next slide, please. The originally proposed facility is new construction on town-owned land on Hudson Road next to the fire station. It's about 18,500 square feet on two stories. The estimated cost is $8.2 million. I want to emphasize that the estimated cost. Bidding could well come in below that, and hopefully will. That's been our experience with our last few building projects. And if it comes in below that, we will spend that much less money. We are trying to be prudent and appropriate with our town assets and resources. We need to build a police station that's designed not only for our needs today, but our needs over the next 30, 40, and 50 years. The town, through its permanent building committee, engaged an architectural firm to draw up these initial plans. And an appropriate police station is the one that has been designed and is projected to cost the $8.2 million. We've known about this for quite a number of years, and we're trying to replace our buildings and upgrade our buildings in a way that keeps our debt service level. The two previous building projects that we had, including the DPW and part of the library and the schools, will be paid off in the next year. So if we do approve this project, there will be no net change in our tax bills. Also, what's important, I think, here is that the sticker shock, we think, is an issue here. $8.2 million, yes, it's a lot of money. And but when we look at it, we've asked the architect to try to knock off some of the price. If you move on to page 2 of the slides, or rather page 3, these are some of the issues that we've heard from the public in the week and a half or so since the town election. We think these can be addressed tonight in our presentations. We also suggest that it is the most appropriate way to build a new police station now when the other items are coming off the budget. I'm going to turn to Maureen to continue the presentation.
Thank you. As Selectman Keller said, these are the kind of issues we've heard, and I briefly want to address each one of them. First, is this the right solution? Is it the right size? Is the design too big or too expensive? Bill said it's that we think it. We after we designed it, or in terms of the program, we said, well, how does it compare to other towns? What stations they have? Same size as comparables. same square foot cost to do as comparables. We tried to apply lessons we learned from the minute we built that station on Route 20. We knew it was too small. When they tried to do the addition, they were so confined by the space and by what they'd already done. It's 6,400, 6,500 is now. People saying, well, it's going to triple. Wow, that's great. I mean, 6,400, that's less than the school administration staff has in Fairbanks building. It's that's way smaller. It's not that what's going up is so big. The design does include space for future growth, and that's a critical element we want to explain further. Again, our program started with assessing modern police programs, and we tried to design the station that we've presented for that. Someone said, well, maybe it isn't clear that the whole $8.2 million isn't for construction, so we tried to lay out this budget. Again, our architect who came up with schematics and the construction is here, so I won't spend a whole lot of time on it. If you have questions, he can answer. But you can see at the top, I think you can see that $6.something million there is the real hard construction cost. The rest of the design, there's a variety of other things down there, and then there's the bonding cost bringing it to the $8.2 million. So it's not construction $8.2 million. We quickly, since the election, have taken a look at, well, if we tried to make a smaller station, what would that do? The chief will show you some schematics, and we have the handouts for you, actually showing you a little bit on the small size, but to take a look at that. In doing that, everything on the upstairs we removed. We heard, what's this with a fitness station? That looks luxurious. That looks over the top. All we were doing there is using some unfinished space at the top and saying that we put the officers on their own money, could put in fitness equipment. I think being physically fit, et cetera, we talk about all the health insurance, you know, something we were trying to do to try to say keep fit. It's not critical. It can go back to being unfinished space. So that's not where we thought was critical. But again, if we took that out, reduce the future space, we can do a $7.2 million building. We'll try to show that again on a very preliminary basis. But we want to make this point that the larger building is the cheapest way to plan for future space needs. Unfinished building space right now is the cheapest way to do it. If we have to go back in and try to add to a tight site and try to deal with all the electrical and all the other systems and add all those in, you're talking costly and you're talking problematic. We were trying to anticipate that. Is this the right time for the project? I know. I mean, I'm not downplaying that at all, the three ballot questions and looking at that. We can't be already attentive. Thank you. Again, we want to emphasize just for the long term. The town has 10 buildings and needs to maintain all of them. If we did one every 5 years, just coming back, it takes us 50 years to get through all the buildings. If we keep pushing them off and pushing them off, we're creating this balloon liability for ourselves. Also, from the financial management perspective, we note again construction costs and what's happening. I don't have the exact numbers. The town of Weston's looking at a DPW building. They've been looking at building that for years, and they've gone from a small to like $11 million DPW. The town of Lexington's been putting off their DPW. They're looking like a $32 million building right now. This is what's happening in the construction industry. We are trying to say, let's keep aware of that. And again, we've made the point again, we've planned this for 10 years with the capital and the debt, so that we could slide that in as they came down. So we weren't asking you to increase your taxes for the capital and debt part. We did it so it would fit in. Is it the right location? We gave you a handout to address some of those on Hudson Road. The pros are we're creating a public safety campus, combining the dispatch and the training room, et cetera, for there. We already own the land. It can be accommodated. It can work. We do understand it's not on Route 20, and again, we tried to address that in the handout. We are addressing a residential neighborhood. We know that we're trying to make it the best we can to have the minimal impact as it can be. The last one I've heard is, well, it wasn't clear to me what would happen with the old station, and try to say that would be up to town meeting with the Board of Selectmen looking at it, but state law provides when you sell a capital asset, the proceeds of that have to go into either that the project you had or another one. It can only be used for that. It can't be dumped into your operating fund. So we could use those funds. It was $900,000, a million, and the decision was made to sell it. We could further reduce the cost of this project. I'm quickly going to turn it over to Chief Fadgen just to run through a couple of these things, and then we're going to let Bill Keller close it out for you. Thank you.
Okay, when we looked at this, we looked at operational needs, safety concerns, and future growth. Right in here, you'll see that the present station has no training capability. what we did was we asked about a training center for police, fire, police and fire joint training room, or police, fire separate training. Plus, this is an emergency operations center. The town presently has no location where, in an emergency, all town officials, appointed, elected, could go and manage the crisis with utilities and everything else, and direct them to the area and the assets to the problem so that they can clear it up. The lobby, this is a family conference room. Basically, that's right off of the lobby also. This part here is the operations in the blue section of the station, proposed station. The dispatch. The dispatch is a self-contained area. It's a joint dispatch, police, fire, where now if you call the dispatch at the police station and you need the fire, you transfer it up there. You have to go talk to two different operators. In this scenario, there'd be two dispatchers working in this center. One could stay on the phone with you while the other dispatched the emergency services needed. In this area, this is all self-contained with lunchrooms, tech room. That's where all of the 911 equipment would be located. At the police department, we have our dispatchers check on people in custody, which have these people have to be checked every 15 minutes. That's why the location to the cell area, so that they would go in here, and I know that this is a self-contained area here. It's all secure. Every area in here is secure from the other. You need a security card to get from one to the other. The booking room. The booking room and the cell block area seems larger, and why that is that under the cell block that we have now was built in 1961. In 1981, they skipped over that because they didn't want to make the changes to come up to code. So basically, we have a cell block with 1960 code.
Two minutes. Does the hall wish to indulge the chief of police for two more minutes? Thank you.
This is mandated sight and sound, male-female separation. Handicap cell is required, as well as a juvenile out of sight and sound from adults. Next. The administration offices are basically the same size. The only addition would be a conference room. We presently do not have a conference room where we can meet with staff or other groups. The locker rooms, the female locker room presently, it was built in, it was added on in the addition 1981. I think it was made for three people. We've since added another locker, but it's at capacity right now. This is the most important thing here, I believe, when we looked at this, was future space. What happened in the current station is there was no room to expand, no future space. This and this area here that will be used as a fitness room, as the town manager said, I believe is the most important part of this, so that in the future, all we have to do is finish off the unfinished space. Mark, go ahead. In this schematic, everything has basically the same. They've moved a few things around. The training room, the family conference is over here. One car garage. The next one. They have moved to the second floor from the first floor, the sergeants, the specialty office, and the tech room from down behind dispatch. And they've moved some things around. What they've done here is they've eliminated all future space, all future, any chance to expand anything either on the first floor or the second floor. The beauty with the first plan is if the first floor expanded, you could move the two offices upstairs. If the upstairs expanded, you could just add on to the rooms upstairs. But basically, in this scenario, there is no future future growth space. Next one. And this is the schematic plan of where it would be located on Hudson Road in conjunction with the private pattern.
In conclusion, what we'd like to say is that this project was planned appropriately for our present needs and our future needs. It is a financially prudent investment in our infrastructure. Since the vote a week ago, we looked at, well, can we scale it back? You've just seen scaling it back. Scaling it back might knock it down $1 million from 8.2 to 7.2. What does that do on your tax bill? It saves $18 a year. And what's going to happen in 5, 10, 15 years? There's not going to be enough space. We're going to be looking at adding an addition onto the building. We need to be looking forward. That's the best way to do it. The old station was built in 1960. Folks decided it had to be on Route 20. It was the only piece of land available. That was the only size building they could build. Let's not make that mistake again. Let's build the proper building.
Thank you. Mr. Kelly, I assume that was also the report of the unanimous Board of Selectmen?
In favor.
Thank you. Marty Raganese or someone else from the FinCom?
Right. Just a short comment on this article. We as a finance committee visited the police station in the fall and had a tour. And when we went into the building, it became very obvious very quickly that this current police station is not meeting this town's needs for public safety. And the finance committee feels that this is a high priority project that should definitely be supported. Public safety, as we all know in this day and age, is a very, very critical thing, and the town of Sudbury needs an adequate facility to do that. Needless to say, the Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Thank you. Two things I'd like to make the hall aware of. One is this requires a two-thirds vote because it involves borrowing of money. And the second thing I want to make this hall aware of is that the question has been called in the cafeteria, but I will not entertain that question until we hear from some discussion from both halls. But that is a continuing one that at some point I will recognize. Yes, over there. Yes, ma'am. Can you bring her a mic, please?
I'm Lynn Geitz. I live at 143 Maynard Road. I'm also elected member of the Board of Health, and I would urge the...
Lynn, if I can interrupt you, are you speaking now as an individual or for the Board
speaking,
of Health?
I am speaking as an individual.
Thank you.
With an observation. I am on the Board of Health. I'm also an active member of the Medical Reserve Corps. And as part of carrying out these duties and becoming more aware of what the town needs to do in case there is a medical or a different kind of... large-scale crises is the need for an incident command center and the importance of having a unified command between the police and the fire station and this communications and the amount of training that needs to be done. So as an individual, with an appreciation of things that might come down the road that might end up helping us, I urge people to support this bill, this article.
On the side here, could you bring a mic to that gentleman?
Robert Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. Last Monday, the NCAA had a basketball game, and the game ended, and Florida won. Game over. Ohio State isn't asking for a repeat of the game. Game over. The voters have spoken. They've spoken clearly, whether it was by a majority, whether it was one vote, 50, 100, 200, they voted no for the police station. More people voted for the police station than for the selectmen or any other officers that were running for the office. So clearly, people came to vote. More people voted for the override, for the police station, the fire truck, than any other office. For the last month, many people have come to me, hundreds, and have told me the police station... Yes, it is deplorable. I spent 3 hours with the chief going through it. It's in tough shape. But $8.2 million we cannot afford now. The vote is said now. And by asking us to vote again in 9 months is insulting. We said no. No is no.
Anybody else?
I haven't finished yet. The the size of the police station, 18,000 square feet, divided by the number of offices, is 600 square feet per person. If anybody has children in Nixon, Loring, or any of these schools, you're cramming 25 to 30 kids in 600 square feet. Those 30 kids in that 600 square feet are there all day. The police offices, assuming there's only 7 or 8 working a shift, they're not there all day, they're on the road. So to give 30 people 600 square feet of space is just outrageous. We should give it to the kids. Let's use the $8.2 million. If we're so bent on taking out more debt, let's use it to expand Nixon, Loring, Haynes, and Curtis. Give the kids some extra space rather than, you're talking about 3,000 kids. Give them some more space than 30 police officers.
Thank you. Yes, sir. On the side, can you give him a mic, please? There's a mic right behind him. Oh, you're welcome to come on up.
That act, not the one before me, but the chief and the town manager. But I'll try.
Sir, can we have your name and address for the record?
I'll get that.
Can we do that now?
No, I prefer to do it in a minute. I only have 5 minutes.
And you're using it up.
Have you started the clock already?
Yes, I have. Have your choice.
Okay, I'll switch it. For those who don't know me, my name is George R. Sharkey, and I live at 16 Haynes Road. I am one of the few remaining five-generation residents still living in Sudbury. I attended Sudbury School, represented Sudbury in the 69th Division during World War II, and will stay in Sudbury until I move to the North Sudbury Cemetery. I tell you this because I should know, but you should know, the value of being a citizen of Sudbury, not just a person who owns a house, but a home. I also tell you this because my father was once one of 2-man Sudbury Police Force in the 1930s. It consisted of Chief Seneca Hall and Deputy Gus Sharkey. The police station did not exist, so my father could not arrest the late great Babe Ruth for skinny dipping drunk in Pratt Mill Road, in Pratt Mill Pond. I am sure you don't want that to happen again in Sudbury because of an inadequate police station. Please give the celebrities who live in our town a decent place to stay if they follow Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth's example. And give our police, these glasses are terrible, and give our police a decent place to care for them. I am sure you all travel on Concord and Pantry Road. So before you vote on this article, think of how many police cars and fire trucks speed down this road to the Emerson Hospital each day and night. Stick together. Trying to save our children, and ourselves from a multitude of problems and accidents that occur in our daily lives. If you spend, like you did a couple of years ago, $700,700 to mow the grass and arrange a bunch of stones on a town cemetery, and millions of dollars on projects to change the appearance of our town, surely you can afford a place similar to the work you work in for our town employees. Do these police and fire deserve a decent place and equipment to conduct our business of serving our children and our lives? I think they do. I hope you do, too. Let these men and women know that you appreciate the work they do in all kinds of weather and all important situations that affect our children's lives. Thank you for having the courage to vote yes. Thank you for hearing me, and I hope I kept it under 5 minutes.
Please. Mr. Sharkey, thank you. You were given an extra 30 seconds because all the laughter interrupted your presentation. Anybody else wish to be heard? Gentleman over there, can someone give him a mic, please?
My name is Marie Rock, 26 Whispering Pine Road in Sudbury, and I'm very much in favor of a new, fully funded police station. The reasons are pretty apparent. If you do visit the police station, we have a very small police station. The town has grown exponentially over the last few years, and that's because we have such great schools. Everybody wants to come here, families and so forth. You've all given approval for Lincoln Sudbury, for improvements in schools and so forth. So let's give consideration to something that we really also need to round out a very good, safe community. In Sudbury, as in many other towns across the area, there is a federal mandate for towns and regions to have, as Lynn Geitz so eloquently put it, have an incident command center for situations such as required under the Department of Homeland Security. The location, the size of the building, and so forth that the town is proposing is just right for our current and future needs, and I support it, and that's all I need to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to let you know, the question has been called in the cafeteria. I'm going to allow two more statements, so I will ask the speakers to only speak if you're saying something new that we haven't heard before. All the way in the back. Yes, sir. Can someone bring him a mic?
Stuart Lowell, 58 Hudson Road. The case made out by town management for the new police station has been consistently irresponsible, deceptive, and misleading at every turn. Town management has painted a picture of a police department overwhelmed by a growing workload, when in fact nothing could be further from the truth. Hidden away in the town's own report, which I have here, are the real truths, and these are: in 1990, there were 290 arrests in Sudbury, but by 2005, and these numbers I'm sure are known by all those folks up there, By 2005, this number had dropped from 290 to 270. This is your report, your numbers. In 1990, there were 67 instances of protective custody in Sudbury. By 2005, this number had dropped from 67 to 14. In 1990, there were 917 motor vehicle accidents in Sudbury. By 2005, this number had dropped from 917 to 444. Your numbers. The only category of incidents that increased from 1990 to 2005 was motor vehicle citations. What a surprise. Those grew from 2,726 in 1990 to 6,952, just shy of 7,000 in 2005. And to rebut some of the other statements, the population of Sudbury has not grown exponentially in this time. If I can just turn to your report. In 1990, the population of Sudbury was 14,972. In 2005, 18,107, which I'm going to calculate on the fly as approximately a 20% growth in those 15 years. As a reflection of this declining workload and a proof of it, the number of patrol officers also declined in this period. It was 22 in 1990 and 20 in your report in 2005. As I have already stressed, but I'll beat this to death, these are your numbers in your report. Well hidden, but your report. So where is the justification for this expenditure of $8 million? It simply doesn't exist. I visited the police station at the open house, and clearly it has some issues. But it seemed to me it's generally fit for purpose. I would also clarify Bob Stein's numbers. If a shift is typically 10 people, and typically half of those are on the road, then you're facing a prospect of 5 people in an 18,000 square foot building. They need 3,600 square foot each. This is just overblown. And my contention is, sometime, somewhere, somebody has to stop spending money like it isn't theirs. And of course, it isn't yours, it's ours. And this is the time to stop.
The next speaker will come from the cafeteria. Fred, do you want to take one there?
Yes, we do. Can you hear me in there?
Yes. Can we have your name and address for the record, please?
We have Rod Tenil from 179 Concord Road. I'd like to speak on the proposed police station. I believe that I did have the opportunity to tour the station a few weeks ago. I was fascinated by the many facets that of operation that go on there. I truly believe that we do need a new police station. However, I'm very concerned about its location, its proposed location. And I'd like to advocate that we try to keep the police station with a nice presence somewhere on Route 20. And I know that it did say in the notes that the board did look at some other sites on Route 20. But it seems to me that the present location is really an ideal location. And if the building on the corner of Raymond Road could somehow be obtained by a taking, that would make a really nice site. It's about a 1.5-acre site with a combined 2 lots. And I can't imagine why a nice police station couldn't be built right on that site. So I'd urge defeat of this motion at this time and ask that the selectmen go back and reconsider the site and try to build the station on the existing site.
Thank you. The question has been called. There are a few more people who wish to be heard. Take that in consideration. So I will ask both halls, if you're in favor of the call of the question, please signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? Okay, it gets way more than 2/3 here. Fred, how did you do in the cafeteria? It's almost unanimous there. So the question has been called. We're now going to move to the main motion, and this is a 2/3 vote. So you see the main motion in front of you. So I will ask for all those people in both halls who are in favor of the main motion, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed?
Thank you. Fred, how close was it in the cafeteria? Fred, can you tell? Okay. While we're waiting, we're going to take another show of hands. All those in favor of the main article, signify by raising your cards. On the floor of the auditorium, you can put your cards down. Can you raise your cards in the balcony, please, if you're in favor? Thank you. All those opposed, please raise your cards. Balcony, you can put your hands down. I'm going to get to you next. Everyone to this side of that pole, you can put your cards down. Everyone to the my left of that pole, keep your cards up. Never mind. Everybody raise your hands again, please, in the auditorium. Sorry. If you're opposed to the article and you're sitting on the floor of the auditorium, please raise your cards. Thank you. Hi. Thank you. Those in the balcony opposed, please raise your hands. Thank you. in counting both the auditorium floor, the auditorium balcony, as well as the cafeteria, it required a 66 2/3 vote. It got more than 71%. I declare this vote as having passed. Do I hear a motion to adjourn to Monday, April 9th at 7:30 p.m.? So moved. Is there a second? Yes. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.